Bob Dobbs, and I'm David Porter, and this is Genesis of a Music. Thanks, Bob.
You did a great job with the technology. Thanks a lot, Dave.
Oh, it's a challenge all the time. Stay tuned for John Davis's Heartfelt Music Program.
Hello?
Bob?
This is Jerry. I can help you, though.
This is the second time I've heard him, but I really am confused. Who the hell is he?
Well, that's good. I'm glad you're confused. That's what the way we like it. But you can get less confused if you keep listening. He's going to be on every other month on KPFK. And maybe you can tell me, who do you think he is at this point?
Well, he's made certain allusions to who he is, but...
What did you get out of the show?
Well, I kind of got into it in the middle, you know. And as I remember, I heard him before, and it sort of clicked in again. And
what's your name?
I'm KPFK myself. This is Dr. Hamilton, Roberta Hamilton on the Hemp Program.
Oh, yes, I know you are.
Yeah, and this guy is really amazing. I mean, obviously, he's extremely well-educated. He's about my age. And
how old are you?
Exactly. So I was born in 1922 in May.
Oh, that's great. But, I mean, why do you think he's educated just by the words he uses? I mean, what do you think it exactly is that attracts...
The literature he's read and the analysis of it.
Uh-huh.
Isn't that true or not?
I think that's partly true. I think it's a bigger picture view, though, that it's not just the literature, that he's explored all media, including music, art.
Yes, true. Exactly.
Yeah.
I agree. I'm not so sure what he's saying about music is correct, though. So.
What do you think he's saying wrong there?
Well, he's saying it's obsolete, isn't he?
Yeah, music is obsolete, yeah. It doesn't mean we don't have to keep listening to it. We can.
What way is it obsolete?
Well, because I think that it... Well, that's a good question to ask him. See, if I answer the question, it's going to be totally me. And I've listened to Bob a lot. But I'm going to give you more my based opinion. So I like music. I think that the only important music is music that's created live, even though I'll continue to listen to pre-recorded music in the radio. But I think it's the experience of creating music live that's important. And I think what Bob does is he creates music. He's like a jazz musician improvising. And he has so much to pull from that it sounds good. Cecil Taylor, one of the greatest jazz improvisers of all time, a pianist, once asked Bob, "What do you play?" And he said, "The radio."
That's amazing.
Yeah, but I would stress to you to call back, and if it's not on March 19th or May 21st, make it July 23rd. Call back, you know, early, around 7, because you get more time with Bob then, and in the phone lines will definitely be corrected by then, where you can dialogue with him and ask him why does he think music is obsolete.
There's no way to talk to him in between the meantime?
Well, that's a possibility. I mean, it's harder to arrange that. If you wanted to, I produce radio shows, and I would be willing to front the bill for you to talk to him here at my home on the phone. He would be on the phone, and you would be live, and we could record that.
Well, I see.
If you want to outline some themes you want to dialogue with him about, then it is a possibility we could broadcast this show over Roy's program.
Well, that might be interesting.
Yeah, it'd be really good. I mean, I think you have a lot of knowledge. Just what I don't know a lot about you, but I know some through Jeannie, that you probably have a lot of interesting things to touch on, because just with your herb knowledge, and Bob's connection with his wife in creating the most effective remedy for AIDS currently, the Mir technique, where it's homeopathic Chinese herbal remedies shot into acupuncture points.
Yeah, that's what I heard before. That's
right.
That I remember. Yeah.
Right. Okay. So that's something you could discuss further.
Uh-huh.
Do you have a paper and pencil?
Yeah, I can get one.
Okay.
That's a bad one here. Okay, go. Hello?
Yeah, what?
With it all. you know, I have to understand what he's talking about in his context of about virtual reality and blah, 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 and the media and this and that. I mean, this went by me pretty fast.
Now, that's the point. You don't have to understand it. You need to just continue to let it wash over you. You're just, it's like, do you know the saying that a fish isn't aware that he's in water?
That's true, yeah.
See, you're not aware that you're subsumed in the electronic environment, and this is just, he's just a mixed corporate media. He's just part of the electronic environment. He's nothing. He's everything and nothing at the same time. So you don't have to worry about understanding the verbiage he uses. I think what you need to worry about, if you had a dialogue with him, is just listening and talking, you know, matching and making.
Mm-hmm.
That you have the ability to make, and you have the ability to mirror or listen to what he's saying. It doesn't matter if you understand it, believe me.
He's saying he's the highest consciousness that we have. Is that what he's saying?
Well, yeah, I think we all are the highest consciousness.
All right, okay, fine. I was going to say, well, is he limiting himself to that or what? You know?
No, I don't think so. And I think that's what is often misunderstood about Bob, is that he's not an egomaniac. In a lot of ways, he is. But it's like, well, it's hard to explain. You can't, if you can get past that, then you're going to be better off. But if you get caught up in one, not understanding his words and being alienated by that, and two, being alienated by his egomaniacal way, you won't be able to come out with more knowledge or more insights.
I would like to discuss the difference between Plato and Aristotle with him. I don't think he really understands it.
Well, that's good. I think I think that would be a great jumping off point. I mean, like I said,
and the mystic, as far as that's concerned, I'm not so sure, you know?
Right.
I don't know whether he's applying this.
If he's a what?
I beg your pardon?
You don't know if he's a what?
I don't know if he's applying the term mystical correctly, as far as I understand it.
Right. Well, that's another thing. I mean, words are the worst way to communicate, but that's all we got.
Yeah, that's true.
And when we're in the discarnate state. Now, if we were in person, we can use our body language as well.
Mm-hmm, that's true.
So that's all part of taking words as tools and deciphering, you know, what each word means. So it's a process of talking it out.
Uh-huh.
Because I think he touches on certain words and people get thrown to one bias or another when they hear the word. And indeed, he needs to be asked, well, what did you mean by that? And let's talk about that. So maybe there's more clarification then.
Yeah. As far as Rush Limbaugh is concerned, which I thoroughly detest, I turn him on to see what the enemy's doing here.
You say you do turn him on.
Occasionally.
Well, that's important. See, you can, you know, think of the saying, you are who you hate. You create what you resist.
I guess.
You know, and that I'm not saying you're Rush Limbaugh, but I think it's important that you that indeed you can say you hate him, but that you're going to tune in.
I don't tune in. You know, I don't find out what time he's on. If I happen to
relax
at a certain time, which is around 3 o'clock or something, and I want to get in some kind of a hypnotized mode, and I'm listening to television, I might, you know.
Well, that's good. See, right there, that's saying a lot. You're relaxed, so you turn on Rush Limbaugh. That said a lot to me right there. Now, I know you don't love him, but what you're doing is you're doing just what the White House does. You're monitoring him. You're saying this guy really does have something to say, and he's important, and I want to know your enemy. That's your philosophy. All the power to you.
Well, you know, actually, I can only stand it so long that I turn it off.
Right.
So he passes to me.
But still,
I don't know what you're saying is correct or not, because his own, you know, appearance is repulsive.
Well, I think this is the point I'm trying to make, is that if all you listened to was KPFK, you'd be narrow-minded. If you only read the New York, LA Times, you'd be narrow-minded. I think it's better to pursue a big-picture view. So you have to read Farrakhan, you have to read LaRouche, and you have to read the Spotlight.
I read LaRouche. I have, and I read Criminal Politics, which is what, Patterson, or...
Right.
and all these things. I've read them all, you know.
Well, that's good. That's what
Spotlight. I mean, the whole thing. You know?
Right, right. That's what I'm saying. And,
yeah.
And what that's what Bob's encouraging is that the big picture view is more important.
Uh-huh. I see. Well, it'd be interesting to have a little. Okay, give me your address. Hello?
Okay. My name is Jerry. Jerry.
Jerry.
Fial.
Al.
Ka.
Ka.
24.
24.
27.
27.
And a half.
And one half.
Glendon.
G-L-E-N.
No, G-L-Y-N.
G-L-Y-N.
D-O-N.
D-O-N. Is that Westwood?
That's Venice.
Oh, Venice.
And that's 902.
902.
91.
91.
So send me a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Okay.
And then I'll send you information. Put a little note in there if you want. I would say twofold. If you want to talk to Bob personally, put a little note in there in that regard. If you want to talk to him in a taped radio program, put a note in there in that regard and stress what sort of themes you would like to touch on.
Well, there's so many things going on.
Well, that's all right.
I mean,
just outline 10 of them then.
This was like a kaleidoscope, wasn't it, this morning?
That's a beautiful word to use. That's exactly what it is. And I think the last caller summed it up the best.
Yeah, and I know a few of these people, Tariq and whatnot. I mean, I've been, you know, at the federal building with him and all around the place and whatnot. And it's interesting to hear their points of view.
Well, Tariq made a horrible blunder. I mean, and I love Tariq, too. I was at that rally. He said, we got to get rid of mixed corporate media, and he doesn't realize that's what Bob is. He is mixed corporate media.
Is he really?
Yeah, that's what we put in his press release, that Bob is the mixed corporate media. But, you know, Tariq's trying, and he's very observant, and he's very knowledgeable. So
I
praise him.
He gave me a packet of stuff that blew me away, you know.
Oh, his pack is amazing. But, see, what I'm trying to say is something that's real basic. And that Bob stresses, and that everybody has value, you know?
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and everybody has something to teach us. So we can't let our biases get in the way and say, I refuse this. And that was a good praise on KPFK's whole philosophy with Akarita calling.
Yes.
You know, he's confused about Bob, but at the same time, he celebrated something that we put right on our flyer. It says, wear your radio with Bob Dobbs on January 22nd. And he said right away that KPFK is his identity. It is. He didn't say this. He said, in a way, he was saying, it is my coat. It is what I wear. It is how I identify myself.
Uh-huh.
So he was saying, he was reflecting exactly what we tried to get across, that you can wear your radio by tuning in this show.
That's extremely interesting.
Yeah.
I love all these metaphors.
Yeah, that's what
it is. It's beautiful, you know?
It is. It's very beautiful. And all I can do is stress reading Finnegan's Wake and McLuhan.
Well, it seems to me, okay, McLuhan, what the heck was that? I mean,
well, Marcia McLuhan is a writer, and when you send your self-addressed stamped envelope, I'll send you a list of all the books that he's written and the 5 to 8 that are in print.
Oh, wonderful. That'll
and then you
be
can
great.
Seek them out, and usually they're at garage sales and used bookstores real cheap because no one can figure out what the heck they're saying, so they get rid of them fast.
Is that it?
No, they're beautiful books, though. I'm not kidding you. Medium is the Massage, I'm sure you saw, because it was a big book during the 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
One thing, this is what I wanted to ask you. What about his video, this Bob Dobbs' video? What's that?
Well, we're showing those videos at Vidiot's on February 11th. It's a video store in Santa Monica. And it's going to be very crowded. I would suggest getting there at 8:30, and we'll be showing the two videos he referred to, which are... Everything's Disappeared, which are just 4 minutes each.
Oh.
And then the first video at 9:15 will start is him explaining Finnegan's Wake in 4 personas all at once.
Oh, my God.
So if you can get over to Vidiot's, I'd say get there at 8:30.
Where is that?
It's at 302 Pico Boulevard.
302 Pico. Okay. Vidiot's, V-I-D?
Yeah, I-O-T-S. It's right across the street from the Santa Monica Civic.
Oh, I know where that is.
And it's February 11th, and I would say get there at 8:30 because it's going to be packed.
Okay, 8:30,
yeah.
Huh?
But it was really good talking to you, Roberta, and maybe we should get going because I know a lot of people are coming.
I'm glad that I did talk with you.
Yeah, it was really nice, and I hope you stay in touch. You got my number, and you can call me anytime.
Yeah, you know where I am. I'm on Mar Vista Hill. I'm very close to you.
Oh, great. Well, then let's...
512 Rose Avenue.
Then let's do this interview. You could just come over. We have lunch, and then we'll sit there, and you can interview Bob. Or, you know, not interview, dialogue with him.
Okay, great.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Hello?
This is Tariq Ned Agarita.
Yeah?
That's Tariq Ned Agarita.
Tariq, you know, you missed something.
Ned Agarita.
Tariq, you missed something today. You said we...
Tariq Ned Agarita.
You said we got to get rid of the mixed corporate media. In other words, you were saying we got to get rid of...
I say fucking Tariq, you stupid fuck.
You were saying...
That is bad. That is fucking bad. What you're saying is complete.
You were saying we got to get rid of Bob. I agree with you.
Are you tongue blind?
Did you hear the first thing Tariq said?
What did he say?
He said we got to get rid of the mixed corporate media.
Yeah, and I tried to explain the whole fucking show before and asked him how they have much high decibels of services and we don't want to get rid of them permanently, right?
I know, and it was so funny.
Well, he just came out with his mythic stage, which I pointed out and tried to be kind to him, but I said, Tariq, catch up to the universal government, mythic stage government.
But, you know, Akarita really resonated the flyer totally because the flyer says, wear your radio with Bob Dobbs.
Yeah.
And he was just saying, man, KPFK is my coat. It's my environment. I wear it.
Did he say that?
No, but in a lot of his words, he resonated.
Well, that's what Mythic Stage means. I should have pointed out that's what they're closing. Mythic Stage is...
Well, you did. You pointed it out well. He really, you made a point there. I mean, we should excerpt that part and send it to the general manager of KPFK and say, man, you don't know what you got here. This could be a weekly show.
Yeah, and the thing is, the guy, he really showed, like all the shows do, he showed my point about Mythic Stage by expressing it.
By expressing it, exactly.
That's his dedication to that Mythic Stage.
Yeah, but I don't think that was Robert Anton Wilson. That was...
No, it wasn't. He's the I'll call him the real Wilson.
Good, okay. I was wondering.
No, I know. There is a definite difference in their voices.
You pulled the wool over our own eyes.
Yeah, but that was a good show.
That was beautiful. It was really great how David did it, in fact. It's almost, like, better because then you're not talking over
the
people. But, I mean, that was just due to the earthquake, and I'm so glad you brought the earthquake in, but I'm so pissed that he didn't say the number at the end.
Oh, I said it.
I know, but you said it too fast, and he has to say it slow.
Oh.
You know, but we got one good call so far, but that's it, and I don't know if anyone else got it, but it was a brilliant show.
Yeah, I think we've gone beyond the phone calls. We don't have to worry about that. People are listening, you know what I mean? They're not going to phone you. You know, they know what it is.
I think they are, and I think it's so neat how David waves his flag. I've got 8 calls here, and you people better call and write letters.
That's right, the whole thing. And I got to do a whole thing on Bill Mitchell, you know?
Oh,
right?
Man.
I
know Bill was up there in Malibu listening with the... Or he probably was with Lisa Lyons, who's John Lilly's adopted daughter.
John Lilly, right.
John Lilly's adopted daughter is Lisa Lyons, you know, is like sort of a pseudo-girlfriend who he's living with in Malibu, who's like Huey Newton.
Who's are John Lilly's?
Pardon me?
Whose girlfriend? Bill's?
Bill's girlfriend, Lisa Lyons.
Is like 30-year-old. Adopted daughter of Lily.
Not 30. She's probably 40.
And
she was Huey Newton's old lady for a while, and she's the first woman bodybuilder.
Yeah.
And she's also...
But she's not technically Lily's adopted daughter.
I don't know how the details go there. I talked to her briefly on the phone a couple weeks ago, and I asked her if she listened to Bob Dobbs, and she said yes. But she could arrange an interview with you and Lily someday, I think.
Right.
But the other thing was is that she was in Mapplethorpe's books, you know.
In photos?
Yeah, photos.
Naked?
I don't know. I've never seen them.
Yeah.
I want to see them.
So the thing is that Bill may have been listening with her.
I hope so, because you said, you know, you were getting in Bill's case, but at the same time, you balance it so well, and you say, oh, Bill has a lot to offer.
Yeah, in the world.
It's valuable information, you say.
Post-May Brussels reality.
And that was Ned. You didn't recognize
Carl. Thought it was Ned, but then I said to Dave, is that Ned? And he goes, no.
Well,
it was Ned.
No, I think he was that Ned. He meant, is that Kerry Thornley? I don't know. I'd have to listen to it again, but it was a little off there.
No, but I knew it was Ned, or I'm pretty sure it was. It sounded like to him as he was asking the question, because I'm hearing the leak through, and it sounds like Ned, and I know it's Ned. And then just to point out to everybody it's Ned, I rhetorically say, is that Ned? And Dave didn't understand me, and he
right.
said, no.
No, Dave misunderstood you there, yeah. Okay, now wait, I got a quick question. Who's the voice just before Mae Brussels on Furry Lynn? It's one person I haven't identified. Is it Herbert W. Armstrong?
I don't think so. I don't know. What does he say?
He's saying some political stuff, and it's definitely not Sherman. So if you have it, you might just...
Maybe it's the person interviewing May.
No, because the person... It sounds like it might be a clip with of someone May broadcast, but no, the guy who comes on and says... you know, have you ever been sleeping late at night and you can't, or have you ever been...
Yeah, that's the CBC. So there's a voice before that.
There's a voice before that.
I mean, you can't remember what they say?
No, it's something political.
Well, see, that's the symptom of you, Jerry. You're into the gossip of who it is, and you don't fucking know.
I just want to identify it.
That's what you do. You just admit you're a novelist. You just name things. You don't know what they say, which is Ned's grievance against you, too.
Nominalist. Okay, that's
nominalist. And I call Frank that on the liner notes. But you get what I'm saying. You're always interested in who it is, not what they say.
Yeah.
You want to know who it is, and you don't know what they said.
Yeah.
So that was great that Dave and I were able to talk about Zapp and LaRouche for, you know, half an hour.
And so educated and calm, not like if people were calling up, they'd be bitching about LaRouche being anti-Semitic, outrageous, and that was so well-versed. I mean, that's the sort of thing LaRouche would probably... freak, you know, that these people are actually talking about me education. Intellectually. Well, another one was Bob Marshall is a homeopathic retrieval of who? And Bob says, no one. And David goes, yes, you are. Yeah, he insisted you are. And the other thing is John Davis' show, the show after that, it was in there, and that's why David just
had to do it.
It's not folk. It's country music.
Well, Dave doesn't know it.
Well, Dave knows it, but for some reason they stress folk, because there's another show that's a homeopathic retrieval of Positively 4th Street that's been on KPFK for 20 years, and that's the folk show. But this is more country. But this guy's been on for 20 years, so it's no big deal. I just
Dylan went in the country a bit, but the thing is, I had an alibi. I never heard the show. I'm just going by Dave.
Right. I like when you go. When you were living in Venice, and I go, and then you go, well, the people I was staying with would always turn it off after that.
Yeah, after your show, I complimented. They were so overblown by your show, Dave, they couldn't listen to anything after.
And then you were getting, that was Steve Probst's daughter.
Yeah, I got that eventually. I understood that. What about it?
No, that was interesting. Of all things, her father's the foremost expert at R&B, and she calls up.
And she doesn't know that this Dobbs was almost going to interview her father. That's what she didn't know.
That's true. That didn't even dawn on me until you mentioned it. But it's just that you know, she's her father's foremost expert in R&B, and what's she interested in? Devo.
Did you get the point, one point, Dave said something to me, and he's saying, you know, you, Bob, are you this? And I go, well, are you? And I say, instead of saying me, I go, you. So even though it was an accident, it could be justified as the principle that everybody's Bob Dobbs. So he directed the word Bob Dobbs at me, and I just said, no, you're Bob Dobbs. You'll notice that one little...
Oh, I have to hear that.
Very slight little thing that happened.
Oh.
So the one call was interested?
Oh, Roberta Hamilton, she's great. She's born in 22. She goes, I'm born the same year Bob is.
1922?
Yeah, she's the woman who's the herb woman who was...
Chemist.
Pardon me?
The chemist, the Terrence McKenna woman.
Yeah, I think she is. And she's she was just raving, and it went on for about 20 minutes. So
she liked the show.
She loved it. And I said, she wants to talk to you. And I says, well, why don't you come over and we'll do a dialogue for Roy's show. And I think she's interested in that, but... We'll see, because I told her last time to send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and she never did.
Yeah, she's the one who wanted to talk to Carolyn.
She did indeed, but now she says, I think Bob has a little off on Aristotle and Plato. I'd like to talk to him more about that. And she asked, why does he think music is obsolete? And so she...
You would say, because it works. That's what you say, because it works.
Because it works. I should have said that, yeah.
Yeah, that's
but,
what you say.
Yeah, well, it was an interesting conversation I had with her, and I said, why don't we do a dialogue with you and Bob?
Okay. So that'll be interesting.
That, I said, give me some sort of outline what you would like to talk about. And she goes, there's so much. And I goes, well, just outline 10 points, you know.
But that you, and tell her you don't even have to do that. We just start talking.
I know, but it just helps because it gives me some sense that she's truly interested.
Yeah, yeah, right.
It's like one of my shows in CCC is going to be this lawyer and Phil, and it's going to be called Malarkey. And that's all they're going to do is just talk about anything.
Right. Well, the malarkey makes the world go round. That's the word making the market. Malarkey is the merging of market and Mallarmé symbolism. So you got the word makes the market just basically equals malarkey.
That's good. Malarkey makes the world go round.
Yeah. The word makes the malarkey. So the so she was just enthusiastic about what she perceived as my concepts.
Yeah. She didn't even, you know, once I told her, some of the things you could go into talking about, it didn't even matter. She, you know, your connection with Carolyn, it was...
Yeah,
more,
she got into me.
Yeah.
Well, that's it. That may be her sneaky way of getting through to Carolyn, though, by going through me. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hook me in and then go for Carolyn.
Could be, yeah.
You should have asked her if she realized she met Carolyn.
Yeah, I didn't say that.
Yeah, we've discussed that, right? I think I'm pretty sure it's the same woman.
Yeah, I think so.
She's talked to Carolyn. Okay, so I guess that's it. I just wanted to see. So Dave Worster either wasn't trying to get in or he did get in, but he didn't get on. And Dave took a little swipe at him.
I know it. I know. And I got a, I swear as soon as he hit next call, I says, ooh, that's going to be Dave.
Yeah. And it but didn't. You mean he did, but it wasn't.
No.
Thought it would be.
I thought it, yeah, it could be. That would be. But I've got Dave's new address. He's moving up any week now to just north of San Francisco, and I'm going to send that to you.
Dave Worster?
Yep.
You mean with his friend?
Yep.
Yeah, I think there was talk of them moving somewhere, but I didn't know that far away. Why is he doing that?
I don't know. It's
going to be out in the country.
There's probably various reasons.
Yeah, so good.
But back to that, wasn't that Robert Anton Wilson guy? I mean, you could tell it wasn't him, but he goes, why is Aleister Crowley a fag? I mean, that was like...
Yeah. Well,
that's so uncalled for.
No, well, that's no, it's called for. That's one level of Wilson. He talks about all these guys and criticizes them, praises them on all the different levels.
Yeah, but he wouldn't make a criticism like that he's a fag.
Oh, he might.
That he used that.
You haven't read Wilson, so you don't know.
But he would use that terminology.
Yeah, if he felt like it. I mean, Wilson isn't. He's not a Puritan. He claims. I mean, he started Men's Lib to get back at Women's Lib.
And have you read all three, or you know, is there three books called Cosmic Trigger, Volume 1, 2, and 3?
No, there's only two.
And is one of them, is the second one have pictures of Stang's Dobbs?
No, the reality is whatever you can get away with has the Dobbs in it. That came out in 92.
Oh, because that's what I think Corbin was telling me the other day. Corbin was trying to call, too, I think, because he just saw Leary the other day.
In person?
Yeah, speak before 2,000 people at a college.
Well, see, that's where the mythic stage is. See, the kids will want to see history, you know, media history. So he'll always have that circuit, even though it's bullshit. I've seen the video. I mean, you still look so addled in our video.
Oh, you saw the video?
Yeah, I got it.
Oh, how is it?
It's very good. I like it. It's not... It's great. It's very good. It's very slick.
But is it 30 minutes of you guys, or is it all this other stuff, and you're just on for 10 or something?
No, there's a bit of Leary, a bit of Nelson, a bit of me, a bit of other stuff. It's all, you know, evenly distributed.
So maybe 10 minutes of you guys?
Maybe more. Maybe 15.
Maybe 15. Total 30 minutes?
Yeah, it's 20. Her show is called 2830, so it's 28 minutes and 30 seconds. So, but that's apparently she's going to do a whole series, so that's just the beginning.
Oh, I see.
But,
The other funny thing was the Bill Cooper guy. That was so good of him playing over the radio another radio show that none of us could get shortwave,
right.
Hearing this other guy who's like Howard Stern or Rush Limbaugh on the fringe going off. And then the guy says shit, and David freaks out. And you know what David said?
What?
He says, God damn it, don't use that kind of language.
It's like going, ah, shit, don't say shit. It's like that.
Exactly. I couldn't believe he said, God damn it, they're going to get me thrown off the air.
Right, then that became an interesting discussion. Now, wasn't that the Robert Anton Wilson guy who put the Cooper on?
No, that was the fourth caller. He's very soft-spoken, and he sounded real legit. And then all of a sudden he goes, you've never mentioned Bill Cooper.
Yeah. Now, the guy who called back twice about the Finnegan's Wake meeting called you, that's the smart guy you know about who's called on a couple of times.
Mark Free, yeah.
That's Mark Free?
That's Mark Free, yeah. I met him through Bruce Hampton.
Yeah, but is he the guy that called on say, the July show and asked a really good bunch of questions right at the end of the show? And
yes.
I go, basically, yes to all of them. Remember?
Yes.
That's Mark Free?
Yeah.
Oh, so he already got through on his own, and he couldn't get through on November 27th.
He couldn't, yeah.
Yeah, I see, but he's been through before.
Yep.
So yeah, yes, good questions.
Well, I know, and then your answer was so good. You said the answer is more important than the question.
Yeah, no, the question's more important than the answer.
I mean, excuse me, I just read it wrong. The question is more important than the answer.
And I think I talked about the solutions in the problem. Solutions in the problem.
Yeah, you said the solution is the problem exactly. And then Ned, and then Tariq, and then this guy who said we need a Marxist revolution, and you told him to read Baudrillard,
Jean Baudrillard.
Yeah.
Baudrillard Live is what I told him to read. Baudrillard Live, which is a collection of interviews where he talks a lot about McLuhan. He even explains a bit about my mythic stage point from 1977 to 1990.
Oh, the name of the book is Live?
Baudrillard Live.
Oh, okay.
And it's a guy, Mike Gain, G-A-N-E, and he has it's a collection of interviews, and you would look up page 113 and 148, I would say, has the two parts relevant to me.
Oh, Mike Gain wrote it?
No, he collected the interviews.
Oh, okay. He's like listed as the editor.
Yeah.
Okay, and then it was Heather Probes, then Dennis, the communism guy.
Yeah.
And then the last guy.
That Dave wouldn't repeat. What was his basic point? Just that communism came back in Poland, right?
Right. That was
it. It was a perfect explanation of homeopathic retrieval.
And what a way to end.
It's a little place in itself. And you have a little buck of fucking bureaucracy comes back. It's so tiny, it's a discontinuous homeopathic retrieval.
Right.
Next one will be the Victorian era shows up in Czechoslovakia. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
What were you going to say?
Well, and then the last call was just a brilliant way to sum everything up because I don't know what it's all about.
Yeah.
This holistic music.
No, it was beautiful. The show, again, always resonates. It was good to finally get Tariq in there. I don't know how much he's listened before, but he's missed a lot of shows. But he got ticked, you know, and
yeah.
It was good to have his thing.
Yeah.
I get to say I'm a black woman and all that stuff.
That guy goes, I don't know, this guy says he's a black woman, and
yeah,
then you're going to interview him in 2 years. God, wouldn't it be great? That was brilliant. Wouldn't it be great if Gail was listening?
Oh, we got to send her a tape, Jerry. You don't have to worry anymore. Send her a guy.
That's right.
No, send it to, say, the tweet in alphabetical order. Ahmed, Dweezil, Gail, Moon. Listen, in this order and no other order. Do it, Jerry.
That's a good idea.
What the hell are they? You don't have to worry about them anymore. You start being a subgenius with them.
Yeah.
They might even like it.
Yeah.
Okay? Leave you with that recommendation.
All right.
All right?
So, is Nelson going to send me a video copy?
Yeah, we'll be
organized. Kitty in the book, and then I'll send them copies of this show.
Right, and Dave Neufeld, I didn't know about this, in June made a new version of the McLuhan album.
Right, I heard from Sue that the CD's coming out.
No, not that I know of. There's no CD coming out yet. I got cassettes, so Nelson will send you one. So you have two versions of the album.
Oh.
One's the Meme as a Message, second one, and the first one was the...
So he still wants to shop for a label. He's not going to put it out by himself.
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
He's going to try to get a proper thing.
Right.
He's still working on label stuff. And so it's Living at Speed of Light is the first one you've got, and the second one is The Medium is the Message, something like that.
No, Speed of Light and Time is the first one.
Living at the Speed of Light?
Oh, yeah. Oh, Living. Oh, okay. You said it too fast.
What do you think it was?
You just go, live.
Oh, you thought it was the word time, I said?
I missed the first word. You said it too fast.
You were saying you thought I said the word time. Is that why you were saying the word time?
You said something and then time.
Oh, no. Living at the Speed of Light.
Yeah, that's the first one.
That's what it's called.
Yeah.
And The Medium is a Message. So there it is, and it's got good quotes on it. I've just been listening to it. I'll have to listen to both of them to see how much they overlap, but just listening to the new one, there's lots of good stuff on it. And Dave Nelson said they did put other quotes in there, so they're different.
Good.
Okay, so that's it, and talk to you later. My new phone number, Paul had to disconnect the phone at his home.
Wait, let me put this machine on pause. Hello?
Hello, can I please speak to Bob Dobbs?
He's not here, but I can fill you in on what's going on. Did you hear the show this morning?
Uh-huh.
And what'd you think?
Pretty interesting. He said this was number to call, get some more information about him.
Yeah, you can get more information. Do you have a pencil or paper?
Yep.
Okay.
Fire away. Okay.
Now, what exactly, you know, when did you start tuning in? The whole show or...
Yeah, I listened to the whole show. I heard he was going to be on, and I think I've got one broadcast and pieces of another one.
So you've heard him before?
Yeah.
And what do you find intriguing?
Well, besides the fact that he seems like a humongous egotist.
Yeah, that's what you find intriguing.
No, I just think some of what he says sounds pretty interesting, and I'm interested. You're aware of Buckminster Fuller's concept of the high cabal and all that?
Tell me about it. I know Bucky, but I don't know that a high cabal thing.
You know, I guess if this goes to the conspiracy theory of history, that somewhere on Earth there's a group of people that are running the show.
Oh, that's the oligarchs. Bob refers to them as the oligarchs.
Uh huh. And
Bucky refers to them as the high cabal.
Uh huh.
What's your name?
Charles Morgan.
Okay. And so, what are you saying?
I'm just interested in who he was mentioning, the Council of Ten, blah, 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 these other guys. I'm just interested in who he says they are and who they are.
Oh, yeah. He's talked about the Secret Council of Ten many times.
Okay.
But is that, going back to your first response, I asked you, what did you find interesting? And you said his ego. So that's indeed what you found interested, that he has this ego, or is a combination of the content of what he's saying?
I think the content of what he's saying is pretty interesting, but it's sort of like Bob's running the world.
Yeah.
I just find that amusing.
Yeah. Have you ever read any Marshall McLuhan?
Yeah, a long time ago.
And how about Finnegan's Wake?
Same thing. It's been a while.
Yeah.
I got a copy of it somewhere in one of my boxes. I'll dig it up and read it. I haven't read Finnegan's Wake. I've read his other stuff.
Well, then what would be some of the questions if you could ask Bob? What would you ask him?
There just seems to be all this stuff flowing together as what McKenna calls, I guess I've seen this a long time too, just sort of a condensation point where everything's just sort of going like down a black hole, right? It's squeezing together.
Uh-huh.
And I guess that's why people are going to the homeopathic retrievals, because they want something to hold on to. And
right.
I'm just looking for the driving engine behind this, because I think there is. And
what do you think will come about if you find out who's the driving engine?
Maybe I'd mail him a nasty letter.
That's egotistical of you.
What do you mean?
Well, no, it's just a reverse joke. Study.
I just think I don't know, first off, and then once I know, it's sort of like, sort of like when you get a prognosis of a terminal disease, the doctor says you got 3 months to live, and then you might give the doctor the finger and then go somewhere else. No.
Oh, I see. So, but you wouldn't, if you found out who the cabal was,
yeah,
then you wouldn't try to alleviate the problem as much as just saying,
yeah,
fuck off, I'm going somewhere else.
Yeah, because...
But don't they control the entire universe?
I know they're, well, I'm doing some research on the coming money system through just the American Bank, research American Bank and all that crap, and they're setting up a satellite system so that they're going to give even, like, Native Alaskan Inuit Indians handheld stuff so they can access, they can be plugged into the new world money system. It's pretty absurd to me. And you go from that to, there's people say they think about 2.5 billion people ought to go, you know, just let's cook 2.5 billion or whatever. And
when you said that you're studying American banking, but you mean a magazine called American Banking or just the...
It's called American Banker.
And you're studying that. Do you read Peter Drucker at all?
I've read some of his stuff. It's been a while.
So you're an economic...
I hate economics. I like nature, but economics is going to is the driving engine of. To me, it's everything is going to be done according to economic principles, and human life has become an economic equation too. You know,
right. Really. It is going to become, or it already is.
It is.
Yeah, it is. And so you're trying to find ways to escape being.
Not escape. I just want to see.
To know knowledge is freedom.
Knowledge is freedom, and also I want to verify some of these plans. Do they actually plan on, you know, wiping out a lot of people? Just I just want to get my hands on some of the good information.
Do you think they are?
That's what some people say. Like, you know, if you get to read the Phoenix Liberator.
Yes.
Or some of the weirder, stranger stuff.
Yes.
They're sort of pushing this too, and. But then I don't like their daily politics. They seem to be closet fascists. In a way.
Oh, they're right wing. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
So who else do you listen to? Do you listen to Roy's shows? Dave Emery and.
I've been listening to Roy's show for 8 straight years every night. So.
Right. So do you listen to Dave Emery?
Yeah, I listen to him every night.
Yeah.
I think Craig Hewlett's concept of a global regime is more accurate.
Uh-huh.
As a world fascist system.
Uh-huh.
But he's not appearing on KPFK anymore.
Right.
I wonder why.
I think Craig just sort of pulled out himself.
I think he, yeah, I went and saw his last lecture. You know, like he blew up just because of all the personal shit he was getting.
Right.
A critique about the work.
What about Bill Cooper? Did you hear that little clip that guy played of Bill Cooper?
Yeah.
Have you ever seen a lecture by him?
No, I've heard him talk about the Kennedy was shot by the driver Greer. That's bullshit.
Yeah, but a lot of stuff Cooper says is interesting. Check out his book, maybe.
The one in...
Beyond a Pale Horse.
Beyond a Pale Horse. Yeah, that's what I was wondering about. Cause he talks about the UFOs and the global occupation and stuff, but then he comes out with this, the driver did it.
Well, you can't get hung up on. I mean, all these guys have a few kook things and a few legitimate things, I guess, and it's just a question of sort of forming a comprehensive awareness through pattern recognition. So you just sort of watch the patterns.
Well, I will actually buy a book of his then.
Well, I'm not saying buy it. I just say go into the bookstore and read it while you're standing there, you know.
Uh-huh.
Check it out. I mean, it's actually available in a lot of bookstores. I'm surprised they carry it. I'm surprised they carry LaRouche's book on Bush at some of these straight bookstores. Go in there and show the book owner that it's put out by LaRouche, and they freak out. They don't even know it.
Uh-huh. Which one was that?
It's called something like Bush, the Unauthorized Biography, or it says EIR on it. If it says EIR on it, then it's LaRouche's, very, you know, well-researched, very interesting book, but it'll freak out bookstore owners that they're carrying LaRouche material. Now, do you know your name, Charles Morgan's the same name as a gentleman who was on KPFK for many years?
The commentator?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to see him speak down here before he died. Interesting guy.
Yeah, that's interesting.
Chance.
Yeah.
Okay, and let's see. The other one was Bill Cooper's Pale Horse.
Beyond the Pale Horse.
Okay.
Yeah. And also all, you know, McLuhan's books, I'd say. And, you know, in other regards, William Irwin Thompson. You might check some of his stuff. And Croker's interview in the recent Mondo 2000, you might check that out.
Who's Croker?
Arthur Croker is a guy claiming to be the McLuhan of the 90s.
Huh.
It's pretty interesting, too.
Okay.
And Drucker was interviewed in Wired about 2 issues ago.
Okay. Huh. God, you guys got good magazines there. This is Orange County. We don't have them down here.
Yeah. Charles, I look forward to send a self-addressed stamped envelope, and I'll send you more information. You can explore some more of this, and next time Bob's on, I highly encourage you calling up and asking him some questions.
Okay.
You know, especially about what you first, what your first concerns were, what you were talking about.
Well, yeah, if you just see bad things come up ahead, I'll just tell you, it's going to look like all the religious prophecies from the different peoples around the world rolled into one, and I don't think anybody's going to believe it or want to look at it when it's happening.
Right.
Without Jesus Christ coming back.
Yeah.
So, that's what I think it's going to look like. Anyway, nice talking to you.
Thanks for calling, Charles.
See you.
Appreciate your feedback.
Bye.
Yeah.
Ned.
Hi, Ned.
All right.
What'd you think of the show?
Well, I thought it got very interesting after I called in.
Did you really?
Yeah, I thought it centered on a better tack.
It centered?
It sent the program onto a better tack.
Tack, yeah. Yeah.
You remember which one that was?
What your question was?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, I took notes. You were on Carrie Thornley, and then I think
maybe you didn't know, because when Bob asked if that was Ned, Dave said no.
Well, I think Bob knew it was you. He.
Why did Dave say no?
Because I think Dave was misunderstood. There was some mumbo jumbo there, and I think David thought, what are you asking about, Ned? I don't know. I'll have to ask David. But I think there was a misunderstanding. But anyways, you know, he talked about what you said, and then, well, I thought before...
What about Bill Mitchell?
Oh, and then he got on the Bill thing. And you know, it wasn't just a total cut on Bill. He was saying, oh, well, Bill has, you know, valuable information to talk about.
And he's just in a post... Mae Russell mode.
Do you think Bill heard it? Because, you know, Lisa says that she listens to this.
I don't think Bill was at Lisa's at the time. I could be wrong.
Oh, you don't think Bill's up there now?
I don't think so.
Oh. But he talked about Bill for a while there.
Yeah, I sure did.
Yeah. But even before that, man, Ocarita really touched on it so well. They could use that whole Ocarita part as a commercial for KPFK. Because, you know, the flyer said, wear your radio with Bob Dobbs. And that's practically what Ocarita was saying. I wear KPFK. It's my identity.
Wow, poor guy.
Ah!
If that's his identity, he's in big trouble. But I don't know. I guess there's still good aspects. I mean, you know what I heard on KPFK the other day? I was driving my sister to pick up from the earthquake.
Yeah.
And somebody, didn't get in the beginning, but they read the letter that was written to the parents of the retarded boys who were radiated with the calcium and iron, radiated iron and calcium. Did you hear that?
No, and what did the letter say, basically?
The letter said, we want to put your children in this program in which they will receive nutritional supplements. And the whole idea was that it was going to benefit them and it was going to be very good. And there wasn't one mention of anything radioactive whatsoever. You know, that's the kind of thing I wish had been discussed on the radio. And,
right.
And, you know, and he said, said about Walter Boehlert, you know, that was interesting.
He cut into Walter. Well, he didn't cut into Walter, but he made a criticism of Walter's book.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. But go back to radiation for a second. Do you believe that the situation is what Bill Mitchell described, that in actuality the government knows everybody they radiated, and they know what they did? What they're trying to do is pat themselves on the back by going, we're good guys, see? We made a mistake, and now we're going to go out and try to correct it. So it's just a tactic to hoik up the government as good guys.
Well, they've admitted that's true.
But do you
think that's because I think that's an unlooked for spinoff of the Bill Clinton administration, because he did appoint these women to these very important posts, you know, and the other one is saying maybe we should legalize drugs, you know. I mean, these women are putting out shit that this was not predicted, you know. I really believe that.
Uh-huh.
And that this stuff should be looked at as a good example of what they have been doing, what they will do, which is anything, and that's the kind of thing that should be talked about, you know, and not turning off. Well, I mean, it's a good idea to turn off game shows. Oh, who was it? Was that actually Lyndon LaRouche?
That was LaRouche saying, be selective. Wasn't that amazing? And there's Porter.
That was good.
Porter's agreeing with Linda LaRouche on KPFK. I couldn't believe that. That's like...
Well, we don't really know about Linda LaRouche. I mean, we've heard some bad things, but are they true? And
right.
Is Sherman Skolnick, a Liberty Lobby agent, you know, who's putting down Kennedy? Notice how he mentioned that he almost said that Kennedy was responsible for the assassination of Patrice Lumumba. Did you get that?
I was listening, but I didn't understand that. That was over my head.
That was a Kennedy attack on Kennedy. I think that he, you know, he and Mark Lane are both Liberty Lobby people. I mean, it's the weirdest fucking thing in the world.
And who is Patrice again?
He was the popular ruler of some African country. I forget the name of it. Namibia? I don't remember.
And Kennedy was behind bumping him off?
No, that's what Sherman Skolnick said.
Dead.
I don't know that.
Right.
No, that he seems to know that. You know, we, and you know, I just get the feeling Bob doesn't care about any of this at all. You know, any of the real, you know, damage that's being done to people.
Because you think, why? I don't understand. You think, why don't you believe that?
Well, because, for example, as he talked about Kerry Thornley, avoided the real issue. He said, oh, I guess, what did he say, that he and Garrison didn't like each other? I can't remember what he said about Kerry Thornley, but that he met Garrison. Do you remember what he said?
Well, I got on tape. Do you have it on tape?
I do, but...
Well, what I would do is review it and then say on the next call, next time, call up and say, Bob, you avoided my question on Kerry Thornley. And, you know, pinhole it, you know, and say, because that's the one thing sad about the situation is that you couldn't come back.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, often Bob tries to say, did I answer your question?
Yeah. Is he there?
No.
Oh.
No, he's not
here. Call from your place.
Huh?
He didn't call from your place.
No.
Oh.
No, he's in Singapore.
Really?
No.
Are you kidding?
No, he's not. I don't know where he is. No, he's not here, that's for sure.
And he's the other, the Bob Marshall persona is somebody entirely else.
Boy, he covered that up good, didn't he?
Sure gave him, right, yeah.
Double spy, triple spy, quadruple spy.
Oh, boy. But see, that's the problem with Bob. He is a master of confusion and changing the subject.
Well,
and you can never
I would say you'll
never get anything but a kind of a clever sort of, you know, story that he concocts out of bits of different stuff that he can instantly recall.
Yeah, I would say he's definitely good at that.
He just, wow, he can just, his brain cells are really going fast.
I know. Do you know Roberta Hamilton?
No, who is that?
She's some, she knows Jeannie.
Roberta?
She's an herb person. Very interesting.
Yeah.
I think, you know, activists and interested in health issues, and she called up just raving. It was so funny. But
in what way?
That she just loves it, but she doesn't know what the fuck he was talking about. But she,
oh, like that last caller.
Like exact, the last caller summed it up the best.
The black female or something.
Well, yeah, Bob claims he's a black female, and he goes, I turn on the radio, and there's this guy saying that he's going to interview Frank in 2 years, and he's dead, and he's a black woman.
Right, I remember what he said, but why would Bob even say such an outlandish thing?
I don't know. That's the kind of question you have to go back and ask him. That's a good question. Why would you say that, Bob, that you're a black woman? When Bill Mitchell can testify, he sat next to you on the beach, you know?
But thinks you're only 35 or something. Oh, and Joe Doak Sloan?
Joe Dunn.
Dunn? D-U-N?
Yeah. One of the guys who had the formula for the D-cell.
Yes.
Yeah.
Dunn. But is he still living?
No, he just died.
Yes.
Last year he just died.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And has somebody carried on the...
Well, hopefully someone's going to have it. You know, I bought some down at the beach there, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. I think I gave you one.
Incidentally, I do have Bill. Bill is up at, now that I see my notes again, he's up at Charlene's if you want to get in touch with him.
Bill's at Charlene's?
Yeah.
Well, do you have Charlene's number?
Yeah, 818.
Yeah?
348.
348.
3339.
Okay.
I don't know if he's still there, but he was. That was his last known cell phone number.
Yeah, because he's on in a couple of weeks.
Yeah, right. Well, he may come down. He said he might take the bus down here.
Good.
After the weekend or during the weekend. I don't know. I'm not sure. But anyway, so to go on, I read 82 pages of the Christian Anders book.
Hello?
Hey, Jerry.
Yeah.
Yeah, when I called the first time, did you know it was me?
Of course, right off the bat.
So you kept calling me Tariq, just playing the game.
Yeah.
I said, this is Tariq Ned Akarita. Tariq. So I thought maybe you thought I was Tariq, but you knew it was me.
No, I knew it was you. In fact, I've gotten, you're the fifth call now.
Oh, good, they're starting to come in.
Actually, two of them have been you, so there's only been three after you.
There's been two after Rebecca. Roberta, what's her name?
Roberta Hamilton. Yeah, Charles Morgan, who is the name of a commentator on KPFK for many, many years. This guy's name just happens to be Charles Morgan. He was interesting, pretty specific.
He's not the commentator.
He's not the commentator. The commentator's been dead. And then Ned called, and he said, didn't the show improve after my question?
What was his question?
Who was Carrie Thornley?
Oh, yeah. He thought it improved?
Well, he didn't use the word improved. It got better, maybe. You'll hear. I taped it.
Well, that's right. When you send me the tape, send me the calls.
Oh, yeah.
So Charles Morgan called. So there are people who got the number. Maybe not everybody, but there's... You know, Charles Morgan is someone who didn't have you. He heard it off the radio, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. I'm sure. I mean, and we were... We were just talking, Jeff and I, and we're amazed how people will call sometimes 2 weeks later.
Yeah.
And I say, you don't know. They might have to go to work. They call. It's busy.
They're on the car, you know.
Yeah, you know.
So that's good. So you knew it was me. I'm just checking that for the record.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
Okay, bye.
Bye. Hello?
Good morning. I would like to speak with Bob Jobs.
Bob Dobbs is not here, but I can give you information. Did you hear the show this morning?
Yes, but unfortunately, they mentioned his name probably once or twice. And it's very difficult to even grasp the name. Is that the?
I can give you the spelling on his name. It's B-O-B.
B. Uh-huh.
And the last name is D-O-B-B-S.
B-B-S and boy?
B-B-B as in boy, yes. Now, do you have a pencil and paper?
Yes, I do.
Okay. Now, what I'm going to do...
I'm involved in design and communication, so whatever was discussed this morning, even though I started here in halfway, was quite fascinating.
Where are you studying at?
In Pasadena, at the Art Center.
Oh, that's good. And what country are you from?
I am from Mexico City. I've been studying and traveling in different parts of the world.
I see.
I was born in Mexico City.
Great. Well, we appreciate your interest. You ready? You want to write this address down?
Yes.
Name?
My name is Franz, with a Z at the end.
F-R-A-N-Z?
Schnaff.
And tell me, what is it exactly that intrigued you?
Well, I've been doing readings. This is my first dive into the whole topic, and I'm attacking it from semiology standpoint or perspective. So everything that has to do with the collective conscience and communication and media and ideologies and mythology and semiotics, it's very much of interest to the studies that I'm doing.
Right, but why do you choose those subjects to study?
Oh, because I'm eventually going to be engaging in designing, so my approach to design is like doing architecture of the... collective unconscious by creating surfaces and communicating with symbols and generating new symbols.
But how did you come about believing that that is the best way you could eventually create structures?
Well, I'm not... this is not a cast in concrete belief, but it's the path that I've been building.
Right, but what's behind the path? That's what I'm trying to get at.
You mean the motivation?
Yeah, not so much about motivation is how did you come about that, if you don't want to call it belief, philosophy, that way of thinking?
Oh, through different courses and people that I've stumbled upon and the type of publications that I eventually am attracted to.
What are you attracted to publication-wise?
Well, so far, I mean, the first one that comes to mind, just because it in itself is a collection of sources, is the Utna Reader, for instance.
I see. Have you read Wired and Mondo 2000?
I really haven't. I buy them every once in a while. I read them, but I'm not attached to them.
Yeah, and how about William Irwin Thompson?
No, I've heard the name.
Have you read McLuhan?
Yes, uh-huh.
What McLuhan have you read?
Only the one book, Medium as a Message.
The Massage, yeah. And have you read Finnegan's Wake?
No, not yet, but that's on my list.
Good, I'm glad.
I just bought the, Heinegger? No, Howard Rheingold.
And what's the title of that book?
Well, he's got two. One is called The Virtual Community, which is the latest. And he had an earlier one called Virtual Reality something. It's basically a compilation of his following of the phenomenon of virtual reality.
I see.
And it's fascinating to me just because the fact that entertainment industry or the arena co-opted the whole concept to generate what's happening basically right now. So that's the reason why I'm fascinated by contexts like Las Vegas or Disneyland or anything that has to do with creating an environment that it's a fiction or it's a revival of a mythology with nostalgic strategies.
Do you think Bob created that, some virtual reality environment on the radio?
Well, very honestly, some of the discourse and I found it a little bit cryptic, maybe because I have not read him, and some of the lexicon, the wordings and things were a little unknown for me. So
right.
I might have missed like 25% of what he was referring to or alluding to, or there were like many insights, comments that I obviously missed on.
I see. And well, that's interesting, but what attracted you to the listening? Did you hear that the show was on and you tuned in? Because I think I talked to you before. Have you tuned in to Bob before? The last time he was on?
Ago?
In November.
Yes, because I did talk in, it was on air, and I guess I asked a question or something. And
right, yeah, so November you did hear.
Yes, yes.
So how did you know he was on today? You just stumbled on, or did you get a flyer in the mail or something?
I don't know. My radio pops on at 6:45 every morning.
Oh, okay.
But there's another book that sort of plugs into all this. It's Larson's The Naked Consumer. I don't know if you've heard of it.
The Naked Consumer?
Yes. It's a very fascinating in-depth study of the whole apparatus that it's, the consumerism apparatus, including technology and demographics and the Census Bureau plugged into all the sources of data that corporations draw from in order to quantify the population, et cetera, et cetera. But it has a very fascinating point that it turns the individual into consumer, essentially, in every aspect of its...
That what turns the consumer into?
The system.
The system, yeah.
No, the individual into consumer.
Right.
So.
But how do you do? How does he define the system?
Well, he actually... every chapter he addresses it in a different way because it's different factions of it. You have the advertising segment, which is engaged in the codification of the message, and then you have the production, which is the people wanting to move commodities. So there's all these fascinating links and interconnections of how the Census Bureau has given the data of the population and credit card information, all this basically demographic information, how that coordinated with marketing information and so forth, in a very scientific approach, is used to address the audience. And I think the seminal thing here, in from my perspective, is the fact that in America, apparently, all this system addresses the audience like idiots, and comes down to their level to speak to their level and doesn't pull them up to a higher level of, like, just to pull a word, enlightenment, in any epic. So advertising, everything has this very depressing tone and rhythm.
But you don't think that advertising is just an extension of human consciousness? That you're saying that this is something that...
I think eventually it might be a very crisp mirror of the consciousness of a given population sector. I wouldn't say human, because that's all-encompassing, but this culture,
right,
particularly, because you obviously have this elements that are monitoring every little aspect of the behavior of the market, quote-unquote, and then the system itself will draw up new codes or regurgitate old ones through the use of nostalgia or whatever to address these anxieties and insecurities and so forth, like if we were mice in a Pavlovian experiment or something.
Right, but there was a couple points I wanted to bring up on what you were just talking about. One is McLuhan was saying in the first part of the show today, there was a tape of him talking, we have to protect our children against media fallout, against advertising fallout. And there are no false claims that advertising is the most honest thing going. It's total icon making. And that what we need to do is study the effects. Tony Schwartz, who I recommend both of his books, one of them is called The Responsive Chord. I think both of his books would be most helpful for you in what you're pursuing.
The response of chord?
The responsive, R-E-S-P-O-N-S-I-V-E.
Uh-huh.
The responsive chord.
Okay.
And both of his books I recommend. The other one is Media, the Secondhand God. He said people don't read ads until they own the item.
Well, of course, because they have to familiarize with the mythology of the item through the haptic interaction.
Through the what ad interaction?
Haptic. Like touching, having it in front of you and reading it and relating to it, and then
right,
the medium makes more sense.
Right.
It's like being a basketball player in the neighborhood court, and then a Nike ad makes more sense than if,
right,
if you're not engaged in that environment.
Right, I understand.
Okay, the media, the second, what was that?
Secondhand God.
And?
Secondhand.
Yes.
God.
God, okay.
Yeah, they're both 70s, so you might have to use a library or use bookstores.
Sure, no, that's no problem. Are you familiar with Douglas Davis, Doug Davis's the myth of television and why?
No.
Myth of television and why the medium is not the message?
Douglas Davis?
Yes. He's in New York.
And what's the name of the book?
Five Myths of Television.
Five Myths of TV.
And why the medium is not the message.
No, I'll check that out, though.
It's obviously a refutal of McLuhan, but I thought it... I just stumbled upon a summary of the book.
Where'd you see the summary?
Well, we have it at our library, and he once... he was a professor of mine briefly. We were conducting a class via... what is this called? The television through the phone. I forget the name of this.
Right, I know what you're talking about.
But the context in the school, it's very charged with all this technological hype, and there's many projects sponsored by Apple and all the people, and Silicon Graphics, et cetera, et cetera. And so I'm very much in the process of thinking and designing all this machines and interaction or interface devices that
right,
take into consider or should take into consideration the human factor, and sometimes they don't. So
that's good. You know what I wanted to propose to you as well is, you know, any information you want to send me, if you have a Xerox of that review or that summary of that book, I'd appreciate it.
Certainly.
Or any information that you think would be good, I can pass it on to Bob as well. And you might consider for your school, if you want to have an interactive experience with Bob, we could do a speakerphone dialogue with him.
Yeah.
And I could come out there and show some videos. He has 2 4-minute videos, Everything's Disappeared, that are just amazing. And then I could show a couple other things. I have a video that I'm showing in Santa Monica on February 11th, and it's free to come to a video festival, and it's four Bobs talking about Finnegan's Wake all at once.
I have an idea. I'm part of the graduate studies program, and
yeah.
We have graduate seminars.
Right.
And sometimes they have open slots, because normally what we have are speakers, artists that come from New York or museum curators.
Right.
Different countries and so forth. And that would be a fantastic...
Let's do it, because I have enough video
yes.
that he doesn't have to come here. And all you need is a speaker phone, and we can mic it if you want to, or, you know, how many people are going to be in the room.
Oh, it could... See, we have a very state-of-the-art auditorium that can communicate via satellite and
right.
video and blah, blah, blah.
Right, right. We could do it up really good. And I could show, you know, 20, 30 minutes to 14 hours of video, any amount you want. And then Bob could speak and do question and answers. I mean, he spoke at colleges before, but it's not like he's going to come here and speak live, even if they... I don't even think he would do it if they paid his transportation or anything, but I think he would love to do it over the phone.
Well, could you send me... you don't have a fax?
No.
Okay, I'll send you that envelope, and if you send me all that information... I wasn't familiar with him or his name, and...
I'll send you all the information, and then you can make the proposal. And just stay in touch. You have my phone number, and I think it would be outstanding.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well...
And your name is Franz, F-R-A-N-Z.
Yes, and the last name is Schnaz, S as in Sam.
Okay.
T-H-N as in Nancy, double.
T-H-N?
Hmm?
Spell the whole last name again.
S-C-H.
Okay.
N.
Uh-huh.
Double A.
Uh-huh.
S.
S as in Sam?
Correct.
Okay. So you stay in touch, send me your send me the envelope, and then I'll send you all the information. And then we'll go from there.
Fantastic. Thank you very much for your time.
Very good talking to you.
Goodbye.
Hello?
Oh, is Jerry there?
Speaking.
Oh, this is Theodore.
Hi.
How you doing?
Hello?
Yes, this is the number for the Bob Dobbs information.
Yes, it is. What is your name?
So did you hear me say I missed about 30 seconds of the air check this morning?
Yes, I did.
Did you get an air check of it?
Oh, sure, David.
Well, okay, sometime we'll figure out how, because my cassettes have about a two-minute overlap, so all I need to do is, like, during that 2 minutes of silence or something, is just, you know, stick it on there.
Oh, no problem. I'll bring it to you next.
Well, how was it?
I thought it was outstanding. You handled yourself so well, and the most entertaining thing was... when the Bill Cooper guy ended with the word shit, and you quietly yelled, "God damn it, you're going to get me thrown off the air." That was brilliant.
But it's, you know, I said, well, you know, and Ocarino called up, and I said, well, I wouldn't, you know, and I said the management and the station board had wussed out, and it wouldn't be so bad if they wouldn't get on my backside for something, someone else saying it.
You know, the Ocarino call is so good that you should take some of that and make a cart for Bob.
Yeah, you know what else? Anyway, he called back after the show, and I talked to him, and I said, I remember you called me about 10 years ago when I was playing a record, an orchestra record that I'm on, and you said, I think you're upholding the status quo. And I told you that if I didn't uphold it, you wouldn't know what I did. And he said, okay, man, and he was really cool about it. He said, okay, peace, brother.
Good. Yeah, I really think you should take the Ocarina bit.
Yeah.
And cut it into a promo, because it's got some brilliant pieces in there. You know, the flyer said, "Wear your radio with Bob Dobbs."
Yeah.
Basically, what he was saying was that he wears KPFK as his coat.
Yeah, did you get a lot of calls afterwards?
So far, you're the seventh.
Far out. Well, I don't...
And two of them were Bob. But you know what? I wish you would have reiterated the number. At the very end.
I did to some people who called afterwards. I took calls afterwards out in the hall.
Oh, good. Always tell them to send a self-addressed stamped envelope.
I'm going to send you that score and some other things I have, including a letter from a guy who wanted some information from the last show that I was going to give you, you know, but I never... I haven't.
Well, why are you going to send it? I'm going to be there.
That's 2 weeks. I want you to have it before 2 weeks.
Well, you can do that. Go ahead and send it.
Okay, but I want you to have that stuff anyway. And I also want to explain that the copy of my piece that I want you to pass on to that sax group is like a... The Xerox machine was... The good one was down, the shitty one was up, so it's a study copy. If they want it, I can make them better stuff.
Okay.
Anyway, so I just wanted to find out what you thought of the show. How's like the way I worked Bill Mitchell into it?
I thought it was brilliant. You worked Bill in very well, and Bob's analysis of Bill was great. He didn't just... You know, tear into him. He actually said he has a lot of valuable information.
I was like, no, I couldn't tell if he was saying T cells or D cells. I thought, was he on batteries?
No, D cell is the water purifying rock.
I thought he was on some kind of battery, a Rayovac or something.
I am on a battery. It is running low.
But I was like, no, he said, well, you're being impersonated by somebody who's about 4 years old.
Boy, there were some heavy calls, too. That Robert Anton Wilson guy, Bob played along with him. That was the fake Robert Anton Wilson.
That was the fake Anton Wilson?
Oh, yeah, because I don't think... Bob says he could have, but I don't think Robert Anton Wilson would ever use the word fag over the air.
Well, did you like the way I turned it around? Do he sounds like a buffoon?
Yeah, yeah.
Because, you know what? I almost said to him, maybe he forgot about it. No, that's a little too far out. But, you know, I only got like 1 hour sleep last night. They got a fucking security guard, and I couldn't sleep on the couch. He kept making noise, so I went upstairs, tried to sleep on the floor, and I couldn't sleep up there. Finally came downstairs, tried to sleep on the couch with his noise making in the radio. I'm going to have to get one of those things that you put in the back of a camper, one of those mattresses or something.
Yeah.
The campers use, because, you know, I've got to go someplace where I can sleep in peace, because it's just... It's fucking impossible there. I'm going to be back in 2 weeks when Bill's on.
Good. Well, yeah, I'll tell you, you did a good job. You really upheld. And, you know, this was the first time I didn't, like, give you any suggestions what to talk about. But, you know, that furry lint was great, wasn't it?
Yeah.
There were some great things. And to hear you and Bob discussing Lyndon LaRouche and Frank Zappa, man, I'm going to transcribe that because I have my computer set up now where I can take a tape.
You know what's cool is I was using 60s instead of 90s, and so the first 30 minutes is like Bob and David discuss music composition.
Yeah, it's great. You guys really carried on well.
Good for 1 hour of sleep, man.
You did very well, but I'm saying, you know...
I'd say, like, well, I'll let you go on, Bob, because I suddenly was going, oh, my God, I've forgotten what I was saying. And people would say something, and then Bob would ask what it was, and I'd say, I forgot.
Yeah, well, no, that only happened once.
That happened once, but I'm like, no, it only happened on the air once, but it was, like, happening all the time. My brain was gone.
Well, yeah, and even the callers. I mean, Tariq called you Bill.
Yeah, and I said, no, Dave, and she didn't hear.
Yeah, no, it's a he.
Or whatever.
He also said the first thing he said is, yeah, we got to get rid of mixed corporate media. And that's what Bob is. And Bob comes on and goes, yeah, that's my friend Tariq. He wants to get rid of me. No, he didn't say that. But
I love the way, you know, he works. You're supposed to be, someone impersonating you is 4 years old. He would have been a gangbanger on a tripod. That's what Bill said, you know.
That was great. But really, the best call was the last one. He goes, man, this guy's going to have an interview with Zappa in 2 years, and he's a black female. And play some more of that holistic music. That was fabulous.
Yeah, well, tell Bill about that thing about, you know, because I was referring back to what he said on that show with him.
Yeah, oh, yeah, I know. Well, everybody knows about that. That's good. I hope Bill heard the show because I thought it was a great show. You handled it so well.
We got six callers. Hey, I hope you people are going to call during the pledge drive. We'll probably be extended for 36 years, which means Bob will be preempted.
And when's the pledge drive scheduled again?
24th to March 11th, and the day is for Bob is March 12th, right? Well, that's what I was saying.
No, Bob is March 19th.
Oh, well, it doesn't hurt, you know.
Oh, I know. I think it'll still be the 19th, because that's 8 days later.
Yeah, well, that's good, because I couldn't remember. I forgot my flyers, and I was just kind of remembering it. And I'm looking at the thing, I figure that's probably the 12th.
Yeah.
And then, well, that's good, because I can have Bill on the 12th.
Okay.
He can come in and help me fundraise, and then he can come back and help me, and if you people aren't going to pledge any money, at least write letters to the station manager. I posted that letter. I have a copy of that letter from the guy who said Bill was the most astute commentator he's ever heard in his life. So I posted that on the bulletin board in the hall.
Good.
The one I took down.
Good.
Yeah.
Well, you did a great job of carrying on about Clinton and all that with Bob. That was good.
Well, I was just, you know, things kept coming up, and I started having fun. And by the way, I'm glad I plugged the New Yorker, because not enough people read that magazine.
Yeah. And also your talk about Duchamp, that was good, too.
Well, I'm a big Duchamp fan. I've got those two big Abrams books, and I know, I think both of them are out of print now. One of them's on the large glass, and one of them is the Complete Works, man. That was like a $70 book. I got it for $20 because it was remaindered. No one wanted it. It's like 3 inches thick.
Yeah.
It's a motherfucker of a book.
Yeah, that was great. But my favorite is you go, Bob's a homeopathic retrieval of what? And Bob said, no one. And you go, yes, you are!
He's not going to. Well, I'm on to him now. I can play his game just as good as he can.
Oh, you did a great job.
But you know what? You know, it's great because Probst always wants to form a radio team with me.
Yeah.
I think Bob and I ought to do a radio
team. I think that if the station manager at KPFK really listened to that show and Ariana, they would give you and Bob an hour, 2 hours a week.
But it's hilarious because Bob and I are co-conspirators now.
Yeah.
See, this is the thing I miss in music now, is because in the 70s we all felt like we were co-conspirators, you know, subverting Western music.
Right.
And then that kind of just fizzled out in the 80s and 90s, and now I figured, Bob and I could be co-conspirators because he and I are both kind of, you know, we're on to it.
Yeah.
And, well, you see, also, you know, there's a big Lyndon LaRouche contingent here in Orange County, and I always thought LaRouche was kind of a nut.
Well, he is.
Yeah. That's why I was kind of going, you know, well, what do you say about this? Because every now and then, it's like Bob, you know, Bob's, you know, it's like the way I say, you know, of course, you know, you may not know this, Bob, but I interviewed Bob Marshall a few years ago.
Oh, that was brilliant how you handled that. But no, I mean, LaRouche has something to offer, too. He has lots to offer, and that's what was so important was that. You and Bob were discussing LaRouche intelligently and not just in a kook sort of a fashion like, he's an anti-Semite, and they just panic when they talk about him, whereas you guys were doing it intelligently. And what he said, LaRouche said...
A sapphire, you know.
He said, listen to it, watch TV selectively, and that was very practical.
Well, yeah, see, that's why I like C-SPAN. There's absolutely no fucking commercials on it.
Yeah.
And I'll tell you, I mean, you know... PBS is pretty bad with all of their bullshit about corporate sponsorship and their grasshopper shows.
Yeah.
But C-SPAN, especially when Congress is on, you can just turn it on and it's a real soap opera.
Yeah.
If nothing else, I mean, you can get C-SPAN in the most basic cable package, you know, without all the fancy Turner channels.
Great.
But that's what's so cool about it, you know. It's like KPFK, you know. Boy, I'm not calculating this at all, am I?
God, you guys did a great job, and you handled the phones. It almost is a great format because then you don't get Bob talking over the callers.
I know, and I figured, you know, first it said no conference calls. I'm going, oh man, what the fuck?
Boy, you figured out the coolest method, man.
Well, I didn't know what to do, and I thought, well, wait a minute, Bob, look, I'm going to put you on hold. Tell me if you hear the tape. Did you hear the tape? Yeah, it's May Brussels. Okay, good, it'll work.
That is brilliant. You did well, man.
I think I'm going to keep that method from now on.
No, I wouldn't do that, but I think for this time it was brilliant.
Well, I think I may do it off and on, you know, just every now and then when I'm really feeling like I got to discipline these callers, I'll just say, oh, our phone lines are only half working.
Yeah.
God, you know who really needs to do that is Bill.
I know. That's almost a method we could that is a method we could develop for Bill, maybe.
Yeah, only when he's on the phone up in Sonoma.
Yeah.
Okay, man. I just wanted to check in with
you. Thanks a lot, David. You did a great job. I really appreciate it. And I'll look forward to that package, and I'll see you on the 5th. And then Bill's scheduled for the 12th, then.
Of March.
Yeah, 12th of March.
Yeah, he's scheduled for the 5th of February.
Right, okay.
Okay, and if you have just like, you know, any kind of a junk, you know, run that...
Oh, I'll run it.
Run that little section off, and I can just...
Oh, what section is it? Oh, put in the letter exactly what section.
Well, you'll hear...
No, just tell me in the letter, because I won't remember.
I'll listen to the end of the thing I got, and it's the part like 30 seconds after.
Right, just write down what section you want. Give me the letter, you know, approximate time.
Okay, man.
Okay.
Bye.
Thanks, David. Hello?
Jerry?
Yeah.
Centauri.
Hi, John.
Hey, man. How you doing?
Oh, good. Did you hear the show this morning?
No. What show?
Oh, I... Mark? Mark? Go ahead. Okay, tell me the difference between discarnate and discorporate.
I think in the case of looking at the two words, discarnate, you know, basically means like being without your flesh, being without all bodily sensation, and I think the word discorporate works better to describe the like media liberation that happens when you get on the telephone or you get on the radio or whatever, because you're discorporating, you're consciously leaving your body, and at the same time, you know, you're still remaining the sensations of your carnate body. So when you're on the phone, even though you are discorporated, you are not discarnated because you can still feel that itch on your knee that you want to scratch. And that's basically the gist of it, to say that discorporate seems to involve an idea of extending beyond one's bodily vehicle consciously, whereas discarnate just kind of seems like what happens to you when you die, or when you, if you were caught without a body, having no sensations in the physical world and becoming merely an entity.
Right. So, but do you think one conveys more of a conscious effort than the other?
Yes, definitely. Discorporate involves the idea of transcending and extending beyond the body, as opposed to just purely just exiting or being without it.
Hmm.
You discarnate.
Yee-hoo!
But when you decide to meditate and extend yourself across the mass media network, you're discorporating.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, maybe that explains it.
Yeah, that's pretty good. So did Bob answer your question, though, yesterday?
Bob did a pretty good job of subconsciously being stuck to the question.
Yeah.
That was pretty good. It would have been nice if the technical glitch, I could have...
You could have dialogued with them.
Yes, a little. Yeah. You know, I mean, I was very happy with the fact that we were able to address the basic gist of the question, which was that, you know, this is a self-discovery tool.
Uh-huh.
It's a key comfort, I think, talking about how it was the aspirin and the whole thing fitting its wake. And then I basically wanted to talk about the media fast, but he didn't talk about that in his reply, but however, the next three phone calls
did
essentially about the media fast.
Right.
So I thought that was very pleasing. I think he did successfully discuss the Hefner connection that I wanted to explain, in the sense that, like, the archetype which Hefner vivified for the public and embodied is really a shallow shadow of the actual archetype which Bob, as a tetrad manager, is really touching into.
Uh-huh.
And I think that the kind of situation we're looking at as far as, like, where the next set of questions to really be asked are leading, I think he addressed very well. And I think he, in the little bit of time he had, I tried to put in the second question, I was basically saying about the use of all these things to construct one's own personal media ecology. That's kind of where the next push of the whole question type of thing is going to go.
Right. I think that was great, you focusing on the personal.
Yeah,
because massively people think, yeah, but they really don't think personally as much, especially in the context of Bob's show, because it's so massive, the topics he touches on, that people just get lost in the swill, and then they end up like the last caller. What, this guy's going to do an interview with Frank Zappa in 2 years and he's a black woman? I just don't get it, but it sure sounds interesting.
Yeah, I mean, that was classic, you know.
Yeah.
And the whole...
And then he says, are you guys talking about holistic music?
Yeah, and the whole thing that the person was... See, now that's where I'm kind of heading with this. With after we construct our own media ecology, how do I create... If I'm only responsible for myself, how do I create changes within other people's media ecologies, and that's through my own series of homeopathic retrievals? You know, through my music, through writing, through discussions. Having a discussion with somebody is a homeopathic retrieval. Right now we're having a homeopathic retrieval.
And what is it a homeopathic retrieval of?
Probably the early Neoplatonist utopian restructuring arguments that were had by thousands of Greeks.
That's great.
really we are retrieving parts of the eternal dialogue that deal with man. I mean, there's like a series of polarities and opposites which we overcome as we move higher up into the confines of the master pattern of the universe, if that makes any sense, to say that as you become aware of certain things, you understand why it is that people, you know, the way the things that are the way they are, because they need to be. You know, if everybody was realized how much control they really had and started exercising, we'd have like too much chaos. We need a situation where people are, you know, looking back and like taking the responsibility they can and trying to live through it as opposed to just, oh, I have a responsibility, shirk it, you know, and go on to the next thing.
I have a responsibility. What was the word after that?
Shirking it.
Shirk it, yeah.
I mean, essentially what we're talking about is breaking out of, like, there was a thing in the 70s called the Peter Principle.
The Peter Principle?
Yes, which was that every person eventually rises to their own level of incompetence.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No problem.
So that seems that it would be the opposite, that you fulfill your potential and then you get
and then
another challenge.
And your quote-unquote artificially stimulated ambition.
Oh, I see.
Essentially forces you to rise to your own level of time. Instead of saying, no, I'm happy being the stalker manager.
Right.
So, no, I want to be more, power, bigger. You know,
right.
That's what society and the media are telling you, that you need to aggrandize yourself, make yourself bigger and more powerful all the time, as opposed to realizing the just innate power that you already have, you know, that every person has. And, you know, so like I said, through a series of homeopathic retrievals, you know, we have to find a way to subtly influence our own environments, and that's the people as well as the plants and the animals and the minerals and all that, to form their own media ecologies or whatever, basically. I mean, the people, you know, you can't come out and give the message to everybody, because everybody can't handle the message. So you have to kind of let it disseminate and filter down through other people. So it's probably better that Bob's show is on at 6:30 in the morning.
So less people can hear it.
Yeah, because the people who hear it, it's like distilling it, you know. It's like a pure thing, you know. And even if I look at this in the audience, obviously still a lot of people aren't getting it, you know.
Right.
I mean, just imagine what would happen if it was, I mean, the guys were not being thrown up the air for saying shit, you know.
Right.
And obviously the situation is not, you know, not ideal, but it's working, you know. At least he's getting out there. It's going out across the galaxy, you know.
Yeah, it's funny because he's always said he doesn't want to have listeners.
That's right, but he doesn't.
And I always give people the flyer and I say, just make sure you don't read it.
He wants people to hear it. He doesn't want people to listen to it.
Yeah.
That's my take on it.
But you really think the media fast should go into non-human living organisms?
I think eventually it does. I mean, I think that...
Or were you talking about the fact that the media fast is only going to be successful when it happens naturally, and it's not like no smoking day. Everybody stops smoking for one day.
Media fast is really not a media fast. Maybe it should be renamed to a media diet.
Media diet.
No.
Yeah.
Mean, maybe it really means like a low shit media diet or something like that, you know. Like,
yeah. No, media diet sounds good.
Yes, I mean, essentially that's what it is a media diet, because fast implies this idea of like, well, I'm just not going to eat today, and I'll be eating again tomorrow.
Right.
I'm just not watching this shit today. Like, we're just going to, like you said, like, non-smoking day.
Right.
Whereas the idea of a diet, you know, kind of says that you just go on a program of reduced media intake, and eventually you wean yourself off of it, you know. You know, it's just like people who, you know, when you diet, I stopped eating meat, I eventually lost I didn't just go, okay, I'm not eating any more meat anymore ever again. I just kind of slowly just ate it less and less and less until finally.
And it was sort of a natural process.
It just kind of...
It wasn't a conscious effort.
No, it was conscious, but at the same time, it wasn't unnatural. I didn't just change my lifestyle drastically, because if I change it drastically, then I could flip back and change drastically. I could be eating meat 5 days a week again.
Right.
But now I through... You know, it's like I didn't just, like, I'm not going to do it. I just slowly lost the taste for it, you know?
Right.
You know, even though I wasn't conscious, it was, like, gradual. And so, like I said, even if I was to start eating meat again, I wouldn't go back to 5 days a week. I might eat, like, a fish that somebody caught, you know, when I was out camping with them.
Right.
I'm not going to go back to, see what I'm saying? It's, like, a little different in the sense that...
Yeah. Right.
Because, you know, it's funny to me, this one guy called him and said, oh, well, I don't need my TV and this and that and the other thing, and I'm like, you know, the Mexican guy.
Right.
And the funniest thing in that whole thing was, is like, sure, if we were tribal men living 4 million years ago, like at the beginning of 2001.
Right. That who can hear it?
Like the Zen masters.
Oh, the Zen master can hear a drop of water 1,000 miles away?
Yeah, something like that, or a pin dropping from 1,000 miles, or, you know, a baby crying. You know?
Right.
So basically the idea that they can hear everywhere.
Uh-huh.
And I'm saying, if you're plugged into your kind of higher power, and that's kind of a buzzword, but if you're plugged into your higher power, your extended and enlarged self, so to speak, whether that be physically through the telephone or through the TV or whatever, or
a meditation.
Basically, internally, the fact of the matter is that you don't need the TV anymore because you're now connected to all points of space. You know, either, like I said, either physically through the TV or whatever, or preferably internally through your own, you know, meditational and spiritual antennae, so to speak.
Right. Right.
Feel it.
Exactly.
You wouldn't need the media to tell you that 42 people died out in Chatsworth. You just feel it.
Uh-huh.
You know? But we're presented with so much bias on our senses that is the thing that the media fast is really going to help us remove, is the bias in our senses. Because you don't realize that you're being, you know, biased to things that, you know, for example, Budweiser's trying to bias you to think that girls who wear red, white, and blue bikinis and have long blonde hair, what makes you a match, or whatever, you know.
Right.
And they're perpetuating many kind of false stereotypes on you. And so we're getting out of that through the media fast and through other things. But, you know, I would say to Bob, you know, it's difficult for a lot of people to read sitting his wake, and it's important that not only are we sitting in the it's the aspirin or it's the tool or whatever, but that we show them, you know, how the direct time, he needs to do a thing that shows the timeline of the 20th century.
The time what?
The timeline.
The timeline of the 20th century.
In the terms of the role of personal responsibility. Like, before we entered the mythic stage, the collective preference was making many key decisions that were handed over at the mythic stage to individuals.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it's my perception anyways. And I can't say exactly when that happened, you know. But at that point where the collective preference became subverted by the desires of the individual who was given responsibility, we realized that the collective preference was to get rid of responsibility. Like, you know, wanting to be able to divorce themselves. I mean, like, there's all these people out there who say, oh, I give money to UNICEF and I give money to Red Cross or whatever. I'm not a bad person. I'm not part of the problem. Everybody wants to disconnect themselves from the process.
Right.
If that makes any sense. They want to get themselves, you know, blameless or whatever. And,
No, that's understandable completely. Zappa stressed that often. He never started an organization to fight censorship or joined one. He just tried to promote
the knowledge of the fact that it existed in consolidate information.
That's right.
And then let the individual decide.
Exactly. You know, Frank is definitely on the vibe in a big way.
Yeah.
You know, I think what Bob is also heading to saying to these people when he talks about, you know, using these various tools to construct their own media ecology is that at some point people will discover that we used to say, oh, you're born and you have a certain special gift from God, it's your special talent, your thing that, you know, you're here to do.
Right.
Well, essentially, to put that into the new vernacular, we'd say that you are uniquely qualified to perform a certain specific holopathic retrieval.
That's a good jumping off point for discussion, yeah.
See, and that every person needs to find out what holopathic retrieval or retrievals that they are uniquely qualified or prepared to bring in and what the role of that will be. I mean, it's like somebody, maybe their thing is to be a jazz musician.
Right.
Now, so maybe I'm holopathically retrieving Clifford Brown.
Ow! Yeah, but, you know, that's interesting you bring that up, because the one thing Bob's always taught me is never specialize. And that was always encouraging, because all my life I've never specialized.
Right.
And that's why I finally was, I got some sort of approval that what I'm doing is okay when he said that. So that's sort of contrary to what you're saying.
Yeah, he goes contrary to it? No, I think I'm saying instead of looking at it as being you're fixed within one role, like you are Jerry the Shoemaker.
Right.
As opposed to saying you're Jerry the Shoemaker and you're going to be the shoemaker of your entire life, I'm saying what you might be doing is you're retrieving Jerry the Shoemaker now, and later you'll also be uniquely qualified to retrieve Jerry the publicist or Jerry the interviewer.
Right.
See, and I'm saying those things are, instead of fixing you into a role, it's just realizing that you're just being like a TV. It's like saying, you know, and
you're on channel 2 now and you're going to be changed to channel 3 later.
Yeah, or channel 11 or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But to realize that you can get together with a group of people and all decide to holopathically retrieve Shakespeare's The Tempest, you know?
Right.
So you all decide to work in it. Looking at it that way, we can realize that what's missing in our society, and like you said, everything's going to be retrieved.
Uh-huh.
You know? So then it's like realizing, like, what is it that, like, everybody's forgotten about in the human condition, you know? Basically, what I see, you know, ultimately I try to leave these series of questions to with Bob, for me, would be to ask him, you know, what is the human condition and the realization that will bring the people living in a non-media biased third world into the first world?
Hmm.
You know, so.
Well, that would be good. I think we should definitely do a dialogue just between you two guys someday.
Well, that would be great.
Yeah. Maybe we'll wait until after the second show.
Okay.
And also, I could loan you Furry Lint, and you could listen to all four four parts.
Well, see, now that's another thing that's funny. Now, the Furry Lint thing, I didn't realize it was about Larry Flint.
Yeah.
So I talked about it.
Yeah.
So like, I obviously missed the beginning or whatever.
Yeah. Right.
That Bob successfully fulfills.
Right.
As what he would call the tetrad manager.
Right.
But it's like I said, we want somebody else who we could say, oh, well, he's the one who's responsible. We the mythic stage, handing that collective preference over to a certain individual.
Yeah.
And saying, okay, you're responsible, and we quote unquote believe you or trust you or whatever you want to insert. Essentially, you know, Larry Flint is the next. When Health said men like to see pics and they like to read, you know, record reviews and whatever. And so we put out a magazine, and said, as Bob said, he represents, you know, all the things that basically appeal to man and all the traps of the visual world.
Yeah.
Well, Larry takes it like one step farther and says, well, men don't just want to see fucking pics, they want to see some pussy, and they want me to say outlandish things, they want me to bag on people.
Right.
And the whole
me, I was 13 years old when I saw my first escalator, and the first thing you see at the beginning is bits and pieces where they basically bag at someone, call someone asshole of the month.
Right.
You know? And, you know, so that's like the next step from the Hefner archetype is into the Larry Flynn archetype.
Right.
But still, that Larry Flynn archetype ends up being short of where Bob is.
Yeah. Well, it's funny because there's two things. In the next Furry Lent, there's a big chunk of one of the best interviews with Frank with Howard Stern, Frank and Howard Stern. And in regards to Larry Flynn, he became a friend of Frank's, you know, when he started putting out this magazine that Mae Brussel used to publish in articles in, and it was politically oriented. And then they got to be friends, and then when Frank got together Thingfish, his Broadway musical about AIDS and the origin of AIDS, Larry Flynt gave him the forum as celebrity photo essay. So he got to do a visual spread of Thingfish in Hustler. And the funny thing is, you know, you were saying how it progressed, guys want to see more than just tits. There were letters to the editor after Frank's issue saying, I don't want to see pictures of women with fish. They were pissed at Frank's spread.
But that's what the direction, you know, the dialogue is moving towards.
Yeah.
And maybe we're only retrieving an older dialogue, maybe not,
Yeah. Well, this is really good. I'm glad you called and did some feedback on this. This is always helpful. But let me see here. Let me turn this up. Yeah.
You know, I don't know whether it's going to, you know, what or where. At this point, I can't say. But I can say how, and I can say why. So at least that's part of the way there.
Yeah, that's a step. It's a process. Kerry Thornley?
Yeah.
Yeah.
First he called up and asked what that person was doing. And I'd be surprised if somebody calls up and asks him what Jerome Nagel was doing.
Who's Jerome?
The guy who basically helped Marshall McLuhan put the message out there.
That's right, yeah. The graphic guy?
Yeah, it's the guy who was the editor of Media's Massage.
Massage, yeah.
And he's also the guy who's the editor of that 2001 book that I showed you. And he's also the guy who worked with Buckminster Fuller. I mean,
right.
I mean, nobody even knows who he is, let alone what he's doing. I think it would be nice if Bob would do a full series on what I call USAs, Unknown Significant Americans.
I love that. Well, that would be a good theme to talk on when you guys do a dialogue.
Well, I guess that would be a good half of it, anyways.
Yeah.
And like I said, the other half of it would be the use of the stuff as a self-discovery tool.
Yeah. Well, thanks, Mark, for calling. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, you know, want to hang out and have some laughs and talk about what I thought was interesting. And I need to get a copy of the tapes, too, or whatever. So.
Yeah, no problem.
Run those for me. That'd be great.
All right.
Not to run for a winner, whatever. I'll just come over and listen to that.
All right.
But just the call at the 7. And Porter just has to stop fucking talking for a half hour at the top of the thing, man.
Well...
Yeah,
you know, it's hard because David's generous enough to do this, so I can't.
No, I'm just saying
it's his nature. See, that's how he is. It's like dipping into someone's style. I mean,
yeah, the funny thing whole thing of getting mad at me for calling twice is that if you had taken this call as a reporter and not jumped around and said, you're the lucky one,
he wouldn't have.
I wouldn't have got in, and he wouldn't have had that problem. I mean, it's funny if the subconscious wanted me to get in.
I love it.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's twice, you know, that I got in twice.
That is.
I'm obviously hooked up on the programs on some level. You know? So, you know, it's kind of silly of me for the guy to get bent on the fact that he subconsciously pushed the button that I was behind.
Exactly.
He's just getting mad at himself, essentially.
That's it, man.
Tell him I'm sorry if you speak to him. Tell him my apologies for calling in.
Oh, that there's no need to apologize.
Tell him next time if they get the glitch worked out and I can dialogue with him, there wouldn't be need for the second.
Right.
If I can make him stick to the answer.
Yeah.
So, anyhow.
That was good, Mark. 2-2. You've been in twice on two shows.
Yeah, well.
It's the Bruce Hampton Nova Scotia connection.
Yes, it is. Bruce and Bob. That one's going to happen.
Oh, yeah. Good one.
All
right. Thanks, call Mark.
Bye.
Yes, I can.
I'm calling about getting information about Bob Dobbs.
Okay, and when did you hear the show? On Saturday?
Yeah, I did.
What did you think of the show?
Loved it.
What'd you love about it?
Well, I just thought it was just wonderful. We've listened before to Bob Dobbs.
On KPFK.
Right.
Great, but I mean, what in particular do you find intriguing?
I suppose his whole overview about media, about, I guess I'm most intrigued with the idea of artist as Holyo,
pathic retrievals.
And that's basically it. I mean,
are you an artist?
Yes.
And have you ever read Marshall McLuhan?
Yes.
Great. Do you know what books you've read by him?
It was back in the 60s. I read a...
Medium is the Message?
Is the Message, right.
Yeah. And have you ever read Finnegan's Wake?
No, I haven't.
Oh.
And I should. We actually went out looking for Finnegan's Wake after hearing it this time, thinking, well, okay, we'll read that.
Great. Well, you should be able to find it. You can find it in used bookstores in the $4 range. And it's about 6 or 7 in the new bookstores.
Right. A friend of ours, the reason why I think my husband turned on a show a couple of months ago or so and goes, hey, this is Bob Dobbs, Church of Bob, right?
Mm-hmm.
A friend of ours was into this Church of Bob thing, which I don't think Bob's really affiliated with, is he?
Well, they based...
It on him, right?
It on that, him, exactly.
They based the Church of... the Christian Church on Christ, right?
There you go.
Same thing. Okay. So, that was the reason why he actually was alert to it. Do you understand? I mean, he's going, oh, okay.
Because he was familiar with Ivan Stang's book, The Book of the Subgenius, maybe.
That's right. And
right.
He was familiar with this Church of Bob literature.
Right.
That his friend, you know, was into.
Right.
And he'd heard the terms, the Church of the Subgenius and all that.
Right. So has your friend heard the show also?
No. Actually, we don't think he'd be interested. He's an artist.
Mm-hmm. Is he in L.A. too?
He was, but he just moved to New Mexico. And he was here for a while.
Is your husband an artist also?
Yeah, sort of in a very strange way.
I see.
He doesn't spend his life doing it. He drives a truck.
I see.
And he makes art on the weekends. He's way out there, my husband is.
I see.
Well, I feel he probably understands Bob Dobbs more than I do.
More than you do.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Just having to have him explain things to me. I do the art, you know. I'm in my little world doing my little thing.
What medias do you work in?
I work in video, and I work in, I paint in acrylic.
I see.
And I write. I just have spent my life doing things. I don't even think of myself as an artist.
It's just like you don't do art to live. You live to do art.
I just realized that. All my life people were telling me I was an artist, and the other day I was... Actually, I do phone work now part-time as a psychic friend.
Uh-huh.
Trip. friend of mine who was once my literary agent asked me to do this. She said, you got to do this. So I called her up a while back. I said, okay, I'll do this. So I've been talking to people all across the United States. It's a really, really weird trip.
And you get paid for it.
Yeah, ordinary people.
That's great. Yeah, you're exploiting the discarnate state to the maximum.
I am.
Get paid for it, too.
Not very well. But, I mean, they're paying very well to talk to me, which is very good. And I try to do right by these people.
Well, you can break away and start your own group now.
Not what I want to do in my life.
Yeah, there you go.
It's very good for me. And but the point about that was getting in contact, you know, with more people's ideology.
Right. In actuality, you have an intense communication going on.
Oh, yeah. And I wasn't before. See, I'm stuck off here just doing art, and everybody calling me an artist, and I'm supposed to be their vision of what Van Gogh was. I'm thinking I should cut my ear off, right, and just go through the max of this, that I'm supposed to be sitting and doing everything in my life, right? You love to do art. And I go, it's not that I love to do art. It's that I just don't want to do anything else. So I was imagining, after I'm telling people, you know, to go in your room and take a few minutes to sit and realize what it is you dream you'd like to be doing type stuff. I'm giving all this kind of advice, so I just did it. And I imagined locking all my video equipment and everything off in my studio room and pounding a nail on the door and never going in there again, and it felt like I died.
Mm-hmm.
So I realized, yeah, I guess I just do that to live. But I hadn't really realized it. You know, I've been fooling myself all my life.
Yeah.
Anyway, I wanted to find out, can we get these CDs and stuff?
Yes, you can get the CDs. Do you have a paper and pencil?
Yeah, I sure do.
Okay, I'll give you some information.
Great.
Hello?
Hi, is Ginger there?
Yeah, hold on a second. Who's this?
This is Jerry from Bob Dobb's office.
Oh, hi. Hold on just a second, please. Hello.
Hi, Ginger.
Yeah, hi.
Hi, I'm returning your phone call. I was wondering, did you hear Bob's show on KPFK this last week?
No, keep it on hold. I'm getting another call. I'll be right back.
Okay. Yeah.
Thanks for waiting.
No,
actually, no. We picked up a flyer from the Mandela Bookstore of the Media Fest.
Right.
And we heard a radio program. And I just wrote down the number at that time, and I just came across it and just, you know, wondered if it was still valid, and, you know, what's up with Bob?
Yeah, it's definitely still valid. He'll be back on KPFK March 19th from 6 to 8:30 a.m. That's 2.5 hours, and he'll actually be live for 1.5 hours from 7 to 8:30, so you can call up and dialogue with him.
Right on. That is great. And it's March 19th?
March 19th. It's a Saturday morning.
Okay.
Now, if you want, you can get more information from me if you send me a self-addressed stamped envelope. Do you have a pencil?
Right. That woman on the phone earlier gave me that address, so I'll do that for sure.
Yeah. So what do you know about Bob? Have you heard him before? Or?
Well, yeah, just on the KPFK show, but, you know, okay, I grew up in Alaska, and I have friends there who are very into Bob. Like, their whole apartment is just covered with subgenii info and different radical stuff. And I kind of was turned on to it just by the way of the world before I ran into them. But when I did, that was great. They're, you know, true freakers.
I see. Have you ever read Marshall McLuhan?
No.
Have you ever read Finnegan's Wake by James Joyce?
No, actually.
Oh, I'd check out both of those authors if I was you.
Right.
So that's highly recommended. And, you know.
Yeah, I was reading some James Joyce, Portrait of an Artist.
Yeah.
By him, right. So, yeah, I mean, I hear what you're saying there.
Yeah, check out Finnegan's Wake. And also February 11th at Vidiot's on 302 Pico Boulevard, the video store, we're going to have a video of Bob explaining Finnegan's Wake.
And okay, so read it before then. Finnegan's Wake, and it's on February 11th. At what time?
I'd get there at 8:30. It's going to start at 9, but it's going to be sold out. It's free.
PM.
It's free, but to get a seat, I'd get there at 8:30.
P.M.
Yeah, P.M.
Okay. All right, that sounds really good. You know, we were really interested in what we heard on the radio, and just my boyfriend who I live with here does quite a lot of political research, and
everything that I've seen, you know, globally, anthropologically, historically, anything, Bob's the way to go.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, and I hope you tune in and come by the video fest.
Yeah, sure. Thank you for calling back, and I'll send in the self-addressed stamped envelope.
Great.
Okay, thanks.
Bye.
Have a good night.
Hello?
Is this Mr. Dobbs speaking?
No, but I can answer questions about, did you hear the show?
I've heard two shows, one last Saturday, one about a month previous. So what I need to know is there anything on disc, video, or print that I can secure in connection with him?
Sure. If you get a paper and pencil, I'll tell you more information.
I'm ready.
What first of all, attracted you to the two shows?
I heard a real perceptive guy. Now, I've had a big thing on media regarding television for many, many, many years, and he just voiced it extremely well.
But what do you think when you say, or what exact, can you articulate more? What do you say he was, you heard a perceptive guy?
Okay. I think the television, particularly in people that are growing up and maturing, is mind-deadening, almost paralytic. And he just expressed that in a way that he went into a description of the limbic system in a much more thorough way about how it, the visualization that kids need in order to mature and grow is just wiped out by television. And I felt this for a long time.
Right, but do you think TV has services and disservices?
Yes, of course.
It has both?
Of course.
Yeah.
I shouldn't say of course. Yes, it does. There's a lot of things in there that that can educate, can help, you know, help a kid to grow and mature, but most of it is just like a shut-off to the brain.
Mm-hmm. What do you think's the most important medium we could use with kids, then?
I think you could use television carefully selected, and it would be a boon. But the amount or percentage of television that actually makes kids think or uses their cognitive brain is a tiny percent.
Well, why do you think is that? Isn't TV just an extension of us?
I suppose you could say that, but they, like most mass media functions, they want to do what will sell time, and most of that is junk.
Right, they're treating it more as a product, you mean?
Clearly.
But aren't products just an extension of us?
No, I wouldn't agree with that.
Really?
No, I don't consider myself an extension of cornflakes or soap. Things of that nature.
Right.
Anyway, has this guy put anything in print or...
Do you have a paper and pencil?
I'm ready.
Okay.
Was in the early teens, you know, to minimize or watch the amount of time. I think the worst offender is MTV.
Where do you deal with kids?
My own, and also I'm deal with other people's kids a lot.
Oh, you're not a school teacher or something like that? No?
No.
Oh. And what is your name?
Robert,
well, I really appreciate your feedback, and I'll tell you to tune in as well to Bob March 19th.
Oh, I think it's March. I wrote March 12.
I know. It's. Let me double check. March. No, it's March 19th. It's Saturday morning from 6 to 8:30 a.m.
Moves it forward a week then.
Yeah.
Okay, appreciate it. I'll send you an envelope off, and then appreciate your help.
Thanks a lot, Robert.
Thank you.
Bye. Tim?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
But now, to the pleasure of having finally had a chance to read what you sent, what an extraordinary, weird, wonderful, bizarrely unclassifiable work you created in the Joycean, Swiftian, Salvador Dali vein. You violate all the taboos, cross all of the boundaries, break all of the rules, and aesthetically take us to places almost never even dreamt of in drama before. To use a few of your own puns, the script is brilliantly, truthfully, as alternative as Kosti himself is, bombs the petty prejudices, blows down the house of cards we call society, and puts the walking dead now cast for living out of their misery by gassing them. The script is also a gas. In the other sense of the word, it's hilarious as well as humanly touching and moving. It's a celebration of aesthetic, non-homogenized, non-normalized feelings and impulses of life, recognition of some of the sadness and loneliness of all short, you break up the mental and spiritual constipation that affects both art and life. You free the spirit, the laughter and thoughtfulness you provoke. If we let ourselves be afflicted by them, a big if, as you know, shake us out of our zombie-like chances of conformity. This is an awesome piece of work. Bravo! Bravissimo! All best wishes, cordially, Ray Carney, Professor of Film and American Studies, Boston University.
That was beautiful, Tim. That was describing Bob Dobbs.
That's Ray Carney, the professor.
Describing who?
Describing the insect trainer.
Oh, you had me fooled there for a second.
Who do you think it was?
No, I thought you were describing my friend Bob Dobbs, who is he's the homeopathic retrieval of Timothy Carey in The Wild One when he's beating up.
It's about the insect trainer.
He's beating up Marlon Brando, going, "Don't let me be in Godfather, please." And Tim goes, "You've got to be in Godfather, you little pipsqueak."
Isn't this beautiful?
That is beautiful.
Isn't this fantastic?
That is beautiful. Are you going to send me a zero?
I framed it. I put it on a wall and show it to everybody. Everyone who's dubious of my work should look at this and maybe be a bit. This man is a professor. You know, he's doing a book on Cassavetes. He's been a professor for a long time. I know him through John Cassavetes.
And are you going to send me a Xerox of that,
please?
Yeah,
I'm going to send it to you.
I appreciate that. That is really beautiful. You should be so proud of that.
Well, I know that you would understand because I use some of your quotes, you know.
That's what they're there for. Theft is the lifeblood of art.
You spirited me on in Michigan. You spirited me on. I'll never forget you for that. You just made my life beautiful, right?
Tim, you affected my life, too, because just last night I said, here's the man who gave Frank Zappa his first job, and let me give you his main quote. Live long, live healthier, let thy arse make wind. And as soon as you say arse make wind, the guy's eyes light up and go, what'd you just say?
That's true.
I just ripped a double barrel, made a big old hole in my cottons just the other day thinking of you.
beautiful, Gerald. Well, me and Doris always just get back from Germany. Now we're having our first rehearsal next week, and we're going to just rehearse, don't care about a theater, don't care about nothing like that, until it's ready, then we're going to put it out.
Good, I'll help now, because I'm only work 2 days a week, so I have more time.
Will you help with the publicity?
I'll help with the publicity for
sure. Oh, fantastic.
Romeo, it would be my honor.
Romeo, appreciate it. Okay, Gerald, I wanted to call you, and I'm going to send this right out to your home.
Tim, why don't you just do this, since I have some tape rolling. Do some spontaneous poetry about life in the big city.
Life in the big city. I look down upon people and spit. Make up the homes, make up the places. I love the rats. The rats are the ones that really feed the artistic endeavor of people. The rats that take care of themselves in this gnome of lithograph. I let my hawks go because I wanted to keep the rats beautiful. And people should be farting their lives away and not staying, putting down and being afraid of life. Farting brings life out to its fullest. I say to you, as our great friend Nietzsche said, Das Leben ist für eine göttliche Komödie. Life is a divine comedy.
Did you hear the show the other day?
I heard the show, and I wanted to talk to you a little bit about it.
Oh, please do.
Is this a bad time to call you?
This is the perfect time.
Okay. That my first comment, and I'd like to get your reaction to it, and it's got nothing. It doesn't relate to that show in particular, but just everything I've heard so far.
Okay.
How much is hype, and what kernel of truth is there in all of this stuff?
Well, my opinion to that question is everything Bob says is complete bullshit and complete truth. That's sort of the whole
crux of the biscuit that...
it sounds like a Zen answer.
It's definitely a Zen answer. And if I really have to commit, I think everything Bob says is completely true. It doesn't matter, really. It's more or less what Marshall McLuhan said is he's putting his percepts out there and hoping somebody will take the ball and run with them. And I think that's indeed what Bob did. Besides Marshall, you know, nine other major influences, he took their ideas and ran with them. And now he's just sort of hoiking them up so others can take them and run with them.
What about the factual statements he makes? Like, it seems like every great personality in the last 50 years, Bob knew personally and taught. I mean, if you can believe what he says, including Marshall McLuhan.
Yeah, that sort of thing, you have a chance, a very rare chance, to ask those specific questions to Bob. If you're asking me my personal opinion, then I can give you that. But I think because this opportunity is so unique and it's so accessible to you, all you have to do is get up every other month at early on a Saturday morning and make a phone call, and you can talk to him. And it's an amazing experience because you're not only talking to him one-on-one, you've got however many people are tuned in listening. So you have the opportunity to, like, spread whatever if you want to call this knowledge or insights or bullshit or whatever you want to call it. You have a chance to actually quiz someone. And, I mean, granted, you have realized, I think, from a couple listenings, that the guy definitely has a lot to offer.
He does have a lot. In fact, that's why I turned on to him and contacted you in the first place.
Yeah.
Was that I listened to him for a couple hours, and the first 15 minutes I wanted to sort of dismiss him, but yet there was something there, and the more I listened, the more...
This was the first time you heard him.
First time I heard him,
right.
And, but then the second time, and I also heard him somewhere else, too, since I talked to you last. And
where else? You got a CD?
Yeah, I bought the CD.
Which one, the first or second one?
I didn't know there was two.
That you got the first one?
Yeah,
I'd highly recommend the second one because the first one's a little more music oriented.
Right.
While he's talking, the second one has a clump of music, then a clump of just talk and no in. It's not it's not mixed.
Uh-huh.
You don't have music over his talk. I mean, he's too complex to put some disco rap over.
Several things came up that seemed to be chinks in the
chinks. That's a good word. What is a chink?
A chink in the armor means a flaw in the logic.
Okay, good. What do you think?
Well, for one thing, I think during the last time he was on, a guy called up and identified himself as Robert Anton Wilson.
Exactly. Several shows ago, first of all, a guy called up and said he was Robert Anton Wilson, and he was the fake Robert Anton Wilson.
Wait,
let me finish.
Yeah.
This was the fake Robert Anton Wilson. Then the next guy who called was the real Robert Anton Wilson.
Well,
now, Bob knew that because earlier in the week on Roy's show, the same thing happened. The real one and the fake... No, the fake one had talked, and you could tell. Now, keep going.
Okay, the comment I wanted to make about that disturbed me, was that I only heard the one call.
Now, this was the last show,
the
January
last show.
22nd. No, what I just described happened in May of 93.
Okay, so...
What happened on this show, January 22nd,
yeah,
the most recent show, was the fake Robert Anton Wilson called up.
Okay, but...
And Bob took it like he was really him, because he chose not to make an issue out of him being fake.
Okay.
I immediately asked him that myself. I says, why didn't you say that was a fake one? He says, because I knew it was, and he just didn't want to go into it.
Okay, I can accept that, but
okay.
You see, When I identified the guy as a fake immediately.
Right.
Because he didn't sound anything like Robert Anton Wilson with
the
voice he's got.
And especially, I don't think Robert Anton Wilson would
use that kind of language, you know. And also, you know, I'll tell you something. It was amazing, but my friend who had got on twice on the January 22nd show, Mark, he said he's met Robert Anton Wilson, and that's definitely Robert Anton Wilson. So I says, no, it isn't. It's a fake.
Yeah.
And then, you know, that just perplexes things more, because here's a guy who's met Robert Anton Wilson, heard tapes of him, and said that was definitely him. So, I mean, I agree with you. I think he was the fake one, and I think, I know, Bob thinks he was the fake one, too.
Yeah, well, you see that, when I heard Bob talk to him and not, you know, say that
and not discount him right away, you thought Bob was fooled too.
Right.
Just like me. I did too.
So that sort of, then I got to thinking, well, you know, does this guy even know Robert Anton Wilson, you know?
Does Bob know Robert Anton Wilson?
Well, no, I, you know, when I heard it presented that way, that an obvious fake, at least to me, it was obvious called, and had a one-on-one with Bob, and Bob didn't, you know, acted as if it were Robert Anton Wilson, then I'm asking myself, is Bob a fake?
Bob's definitely a fake.
Well.
But that's not going to prove, huh?
Is he a phony? That's what I meant.
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I don't think Bob is a phony, because in that term, I think me and you know what a phony is, because we put a value judgment on a phony. Now, being a spy, double spy, or a fake is connotates less of a value judgment. But when you say phony, it really makes a value judgment. I think what Bob has taught me is to get away from saying things are good or bad, and that there are services and disservices for everything. In other words, having someone be so. If you see, I think if you know, my friend thinks that Robert Anton Wilson is bad news because how he has chosen to mix important historical things with his style of writing, which is sort of fantastic, you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Okay.
I've read two books.
Right. So the way he does that, he thinks, is a disservice and disinformation, and he's making fun of things that shouldn't be made up. That's my friend's personal opinion. My opinion is any way you can get it across is important. Even if it means being a fake and a phony or whatever it means. I don't promote phoniness, but I think when it happens, whoever's using it, that it's part of, say, our test to learn to differentiate and learn and teach us how to read between the lines. I don't think Bob sits there and says, I'm going to be a phony, I'm going to be a fake, so that I can help people learn between the lines. It just is sort of like the natural way he's chosen to present his information. And again, I'm you have to realize, this is all my personal opinion.
Sure.
I have no, I mean, I could be talking out my ass about how Bob feels about this, and that's why I continue to encourage you just to call him up. And, you know, I tell you, he'll tell you too, answers aren't important, questions are. You could brainstorm two or three really important questions in this regard to Bob. Call me back, read them to me, and we could talk about them. Because it is, I mean, I constantly try to get people to come up with good questions. Because really, that's what it's about with Bob. Is the
What's your relationship with Bob, if you don't mind my asking?
No, I don't mind at all. We've been friends for since 88, and I just started dialoguing with him and learning a lot. And him and his wife are the two most incredible people I've ever met in my life. And it affected me immensely. So it turned me on to searching out new ways of learning and new learning. And, you know, I don't do any of this for any sort of gain except basic knowledge. You know, what I consider knowledge. And, you know, that's sort of like a broad term. But that's the basic, you know, thing. I've had a couple sort of like vacation trips with him that have been outstanding. One thing I could recommend, did you get Entertainment Sucks from me?
No.
It's a 17-page dialogue between Bob and me and his wife when we were in Costa Rica. Every night we would just sit on the porch and, you know, watch the rain or, you know, listen to the crickets, and we would just talk. And one night we got on this whole thing about entertainment, and it really turned out to be an amazing dialogue that resolved a few things. And I'd recommend that. There's the Finnegan's Wake tape that came out of that also, where he explained the 10 Thunders of Finnegan's Wake for 90 minutes. So I've just collected so many dialogues with him that that's what I'm in the process of doing, is transcribing them, and I just want to put out a book called Dialogues with Bob.
Yeah, I am interested in delving into the ideas and also Finnegan's Wake that came out of my listening to Bob. But
well, let me tell you, here's Phil, just before you finish your point, let me just interject one thing there. That's what doesn't bother me, but that's what I think you need to get over sometimes, is if you have suspended judgment in regards to Bob, you're going to be better off, because there's the whole Ivan Stang Church of the Subgenius thing that you can get distracted with, that he, you know, this whole connection. There's the whole thing where he says, you know, in the middle of David rapping about Igor Stravinsky and Schoenberg, he says, oh yeah, I was there in Paris, blah, blah, blah. If you get caught up in that shit, I think it's a total waste. Now, some of it, fine, it's just natural. But if you do, I think that it's just like you miss the point. My friend Phil Chamberlain is one of the best people to dialogue with Bob. He's closer to Bob's age, an older man. And in the middle of one of their dialogues, Bob says, oh, yeah, and they bring up some book. He says, oh, yeah, I channeled that guy and helped him write that book. And instead of Phil going, you did not, you know, or trying to bust him on it, he just said, thanks, Bob. You know, and it was just so cool and casual.
Yeah, that would be my reaction, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, I mean, I understand you're doubting, but I just don't really propagate it that much.
Yeah.
So, whatever. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just wanted to get that before I forgot, so...
Okay. Okay.
Go ahead with your point.
Yeah, I just to finish my point, what you know, I feel very it's very difficult for me to follow a lot of the dialogue because I don't have the background in a lot of the stuff that he brings into the dialogue. For instance, Finnegan's Wake is a good example. You know, when he starts explaining or talking about Finnegan's Wake, and he uses a lot, he references a lot of terminology that is strange to me.
Right. Now, that's totally acceptable, and here's what I can, how I can react to
it. So that even though the total of what he says has got my interest, you know, I feel that I'm not getting very much out of it until I, you know, can, my, no,
until you get more well versed in his terminology.
Yeah.
Okay. Now that's simple. That always happens. The best way is to tape his shows.
Yeah.
And you know, catalog them. That's the best way. The other way is to start reading some McLuhan, reading some Joyce.
I've had trouble with McLuhan too.
Oh, McLuhan and Joyce are the two hardest guys to read. But here's the thing: don't get caught up in understanding anything. Just let this stuff wash over you.
That's difficult for me because I come from a science background and I have a tendency to break things down.
Well, that's good. Having difficulty means it's challenging you.
Yeah.
So you gotta just. I mean, I understand you. It's hard to let it wash over you and get anything out of it. It's like some people say, what's the point? I tried to turn Lisa Bonet on to Finnegan's Wake, and I explained it to her, and she goes, what's the point? And then I didn't realize the great line is that it indeed satirizes the information overload we live in.
Yeah.
You know, so the satire is a very important ingredient in all of this. And if you study what satire is, then you'll learn that that's part of the whole learning process here. There's a whole list of terms that you should come up with that you don't understand, and let them explain them further. If there's certain words you pick out that you don't, and you can always call me up because I can give you some hint, because I've always wanted to write a dictionary of Bob terms. And then, you know, the funny thing is he would immediately, you know, like, confirm what they're meaning, and then next week he said they would be different. It's like his dogma changes every 15 seconds is one of his lines.
Yeah, I noticed he's very agreeable to almost all parties and all sides.
That's exactly how McLuhan was, too. You, as soon as he started arguing with you, he'd end up saying, see, I agree with you completely, and people would get pissed.
Yeah, because you can't pin him down, and people get frustrated there.
Exactly, but that's just it. We, for some reason, we think we have to pin people down. He's got too much to offer, I think, to try to pin him down.
Where did he get his background, his knowledge?
Well, I would say it's being very observant from day one, and a smart kid in school, and a reader.
And he thinks he's 70 or something?
Yeah, and a listener, too. See, the important thing is that if you met Bob personally, you would be, in a normal way, or maybe not, a lot of people meet him, get pissed because he listens to you so close, and most people talk so casually. So we just talk along, and blah, 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 and you don't listen that much to what I'm really saying, and I'm not listening to what you're saying that much. And we just casually talk along, and we get some like his thing, communication's not a mirror. Is not impossible, but it's a miracle, you know. Real communication is almost a miracle if it really happens. And he will quiz you to the point where you'll just say, enough already, you know, I said it. And it's because he really wants to explore the meaning of what you're saying and make sure you really know what you're saying, rather than just casual conversation, which we participate in most of the time. So that's partly his skill. I think that skill is important to where he's gotten. He'll read a book and really study it, you know, when he does read a book. And, like, look at McLuhan. McLuhan read every other page of a hard book. That meant his mind had to fill in the page that he didn't read. And imagine what that would do to you as a human being in education. You know, it's sort of baffling, but it's quite a concept, I think. And someone as smart as McLuhan probably did it well. I don't know. Maybe he missed sometimes the whole point of the book because he was skipping every other page.
Yeah, well,
I mean, try doing that with one of your science books.
Yeah.
Would it be a good exercise or a bad exercise? I mean, you can't put a value judgment on it, but it sure would make you, you know, it would push you farther than just the book does if you read it regularly, every page.
Yeah, granted.
Right.
Okay.
So what in particular did the, you heard all 2.5 hours?
Yeah. And
did you tape it?
No, I didn't tape this one. You get tapes of it?
Yeah. But, I mean, I would say, you know, all of Furry Lent. Well, what did you think of the show then? Did you like Furry Lent and you didn't like the talk? Or, you know, give me a critique of this past show.
A lot of it just sort of, like you said, washed over me.
Right.
And
so you didn't differentiate. You couldn't say that you liked the Furry Lent part better than the live.
No.
It just all was there.
Yeah.
And there were any standout things that you really liked.
At this point,
yeah,
I can't remember.
Do you listen to any other shows on KPFK, Roy of Hollywood, at all? Or
I listen to Roy on every Wednesday night.
On Political Night?
On Political Night.
So you like Dave Emery?
I like Emery.
Yeah.
And I don't like, Thursday night's the only night I don't like.
Yeah. Which is what, Alan Watts?
I like Alan Watts, but the other stuff he has on there, I just can't get into. I don't.
Bob Aram Das and Krishna Murthy.
Yeah, those two in particular.
You don't like?
No, they leave me cold.
Yeah.
And you know, it's not a criticism of them. It's just that.
No, I understand.
You know, I
know a lot of people who hate Krishna Murthy.
Yeah, Krishna Murthy, he grates on me. You know, I can't listen to him for more than 5 minutes without getting irritated.
Yeah. Oh, I agree. I think Alan Watts is the best. He's creme de la
creme. I like Alan Watts very much.
Yeah.
I wish I could have met him before he died. He seems. He just the kind of, he comes across to me as the kind of person that I would have liked to have met as a human.
Well, oh, me too, exactly. And what year were you born?
I was born in 35.
You were? Really? Wow. You sound like you're a lot younger.
I look a lot younger. That's why I was interested in Bob. He says he's 70, and he sounds a lot younger. I wondered if he's maybe had the same diet that I did or something.
Do you have a special diet?
I'm a vegetarian.
Yeah. For all your life?
No, but...
Did you serve in the military or anything like that?
Not really. National Guard, and then I was a civilian overseas in a war for about...
Raised in California?
Yeah, raised in California.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm into computers. That's how I make my living.
Yeah. Can you get me a dot matrix printer good price?
Dot matrix? Why do you want a dot matrix?
Oh, no, no, not dot matrix. I'm going laser now. I wanted a dot matrix. Now I think I got to get a laser.
Well, printers have come down probably more than anything else in the in that...
It's amazing.
Yeah, right now, I don't know if you follow Apple much, but they just announced a color laser, which is supposed to be dynamite.
Yeah.
Not color laser, pardon me, a color inkjet.
Inkjet, I know. Some people, maybe I should go inkjet instead of laser. What do you think?
I've got a Hewlett Packard inkjet. I'm very happy with it.
Really?
Yeah.
And you never had a laser?
No, never had a laser.
Just went right from dot matrix to inkjet.
Exactly. Not, yeah, because, you know, it's cheaper than laser, and I got nothing against laser. That's the best. But for the money, I think inkjet's pretty good.
It's good enough.
Yeah, and the color inkjets are really going to be the hot item in the market, because color lasers are still going to be, you know, 2 years from now, they're still going to be over $1,000.
But you don't have a color inkjet.
No.
Yeah.
But I'm thinking of getting one. The prices are so cheap now.
Yeah.
And the color quality is getting better and better on them.
What part of town do you live in?
Topanga.
Oh. Oh, yeah. Now I remember. Yeah. So you should come over for the... I thought you were going to come to the video fest.
Didn't make it.
Nice. So you know it's February 11th at Vidiot's.
Tell me about it.
Come, man. It's I would get there at 8:30, 302 Pico, you know, where Vidiot's is?
No.
Okay, 302 Pico, right across from the Santa Monica Civic. And come at 8:30. We'll be playing Bob's two videos for his CD, Everything's Disappeared. Then there's 15 minutes of live entertainment, real good, and then the 17 minutes of Bob explaining Finnegan's Wake, four Bobs all at once. And then you can stay for the rest of the festival if you want, but that might be enough.
Did you say February 2nd?
February 11th.
February 11th, yeah.
It's a Friday night at 9. Well, it starts at 9, but I tell you, you got to get there at 8:30 to get a seat.
Get a seat. Oh, yeah. Good. I'll make it.
Yeah. And then come up, because you'll see me, and come up and introduce yourself.
Okay. Hey, listen, there's another question I've got.
Okay.
You live in Venice. Have you ever run across a lady by the name of Marie Hausenpfeffer?
No, tell me about her.
I keep getting these calls from her, and I've never met her, and it's a little strange. I just thought Venice is a small town.
How'd you get her? How'd she get your number? What's your connection?
She met a guy years ago, and he had my name, and she thought I was him. That was her story, anyway.
Oh.
Got me out of the phone book and called me up, and it turns out that there were a lot of very close, almost too close for coincidences, items in her memory, but I didn't quite fit the bill.
So you've never met her in person?
Never met her.
And you don't want to?
Well, I don't know. It's a little scary.
Do it. Because does she go by another name?
No, that's the only name she's given me. She, I know her address. I don't have it in front of me right now, so yeah. I can't remember, but it's in Venice. And, but she's a little scary because, you know, she left. The last time I heard from her was about a month ago, and it was just this, message on my answering machine that said, I love you, and then she hung up.
Whoa!
So I thought, yeah, this is...
That is scary. Well, it's not, I mean, it shouldn't be scary, but it is.
Yeah, well, with some of the news lately, a lot of males are getting a little careful about their private parts anyway.
That's good. Well, Phil, what do you got long hair or beard or anything?
Yeah.
Okay, so you just come up to me and introduce yourself.
Yeah, sure.
You know, please do, because I'd love to meet you in person and we'll talk further.
Good. Yeah, I'd like to do that, Jerry. And yeah. I think you can, I think I can make this one.
Good. And then, yeah, tune in March 19th again.
Okay. Okay, March 19th is the next appearance.
And it's going to be a heavy one because we're going to play Howard Stern interviewing Frank Zappa on KPFK.
Howard Stern interviewed Frank Zappa.
And that's... can you believe this? Imagine being a hardcore KPFKer and you turn on your radio and Howard Stern's on. That is going to freak people out.
And the show that that's on in the morning, the guy that hosts it, he seems very bright.
David Porter's very bright.
Yeah.
Yeah, I like
it. I was really impressed with him.
I mean, David's doing a great service. People don't realize that having Bob on as much. I mean, David interviewed Bob in 88, and then it wasn't until 93 he had him back on. And I don't know, it was a strange thing, but he finally started having him back on. It was perfect timing. I think people are primed for it. All five shows in 93 I consider complete successes, and now the first one in 94 have gotten great response. You know.
Okay. Have you met David Porter?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, I produce a lot of shows on David's show. Bill Mitchell, in fact. Do you listen to Bill?
No. Who's Bill Mitchell?
Oh, Bill. Listen to Bill next Saturday from 7:30 to 8:30. He's a political commentator, 20 years research, and he's sort of like Dave Emery, but a little more vivacious, positive, and opinionated, whereas Dave is more factual.
Well, would Bill and David each host the same hour slot on Saturday?
No, Bill is sort of David's guest.
Oh, I see.
This is his fourth year.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe I'll do that.
Yeah, listen to Bill. I'd love to hear your reaction to him. Because if you like Dave Emery, I mean, Bill is, he's a great speaker.
Yeah, I've missed Dave Emery every time he's come to Don Tude.
I'm always at the Dave Emery things because I help put him on. So when you come to a Dave Emery thing, let me know.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm going to have to get out more. I'm too secluded up here in Topanga. Okay.
Thanks for calling, Phil. I really appreciate it, you following up and giving me another call. And do stay in touch.
I certainly shall.
Okay.
You'll hear from me. Good night.
Bye-bye. So, did you hear the show?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Yeah, you said some interesting things, and I think, I'm sort of getting the hang a little more of what he's about.
How many shows have you heard now?
I've heard the previous one, and then I think just part of the one before. That was one thing I was going to ask you. How many, has he been on four times, or...
He's been on David's show six times, one in 88, five in 93, and seven times, and one in 94.
So you have tapes of previous shows?
Oh, sure. There's gobs of tapes because there's 4 years' worth of tapes of the Toronto shows.
Yeah.
But let me ask you, did you hear all 2.5 hours? On the 22nd.
Yeah, they had that, he said something about Furry Lint.
Furry Lint was the first hour, and then he was on for an hour and a half.
Yeah,
did you tape all 2.5 hours?
Yeah.
That's the smartest way. You know, March 19th, I'd be prepared to tape 2.5 again.
Yeah, except he said, they're going to have a fund drive, right? And usually those things go over, so...
No, the fund drive ends the 11th, so it might go over to the 12th, but it probably won't go to the 19th.
Oh, all right.
If I got it right, I think...
Dave, he said it ended just the day before.
But that was... He was thinking that it was on the 12th he was having Bob.
Oh.
That's what I got. We'll see.
Yeah, okay.
You know, just pay attention, because if it changes, it changes.
Yeah, and then, okay, let me ask you. I think you sent me this thing about PixelVis 3 at Vidiot.
Yeah, that's Friday the 11th.
Do you know about what... It's like they're going to show videos of...
We're going to show...
Are you part of the...
Yeah, I put on the festival. We're going to show videos, all videos made with the toy video camera. What I would suggest is get there at 8:30. We're going to play Bob's two short videos that aren't Pixel, because the actual festival starts at 9 with 15 minutes of a live performance, and then the first video at about 9:15, 9:30 will be a 17-minute video of Bob, four Bobs explaining Finnegan's Wake all at once.
Oh, okay.
So I would say get there at 8:30. Now, what do you think you got more a hang of this time? What were some of the ideas?
Before he's always talking about, he uses certain terms like, homeopathic retrieval.
Right.
You're
getting more grasp on that.
I don't know about that one, but you know, when he starts talking about mythic periods and so forth.
That you're getting that a little more.
A little, yeah.
I mean,
he uses certain words that, like Menippean satire.
Yeah.
What is that exactly?
Well, that's just a type of satire. The best thing is to call up and ask him about some of these terms. He has been asked what Menippean satire is in the past.
That comes from Finnegan's Wake?
No, Menippean satire is just a type of satire. It comes from way before Finnegan's Wake. Menippean satire is the type of satire that Finnegan's Wake and Tom Swift, or no, who wrote Gulliver's Travel? Jonathan Swift?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's that, Alice in Wonderland, those are all types of Menippean satire.
Okay.
I
called up that place where they have supposedly have this article by Eric McLuhan.
It's not an article, it's a book.
Oh, well, anyway, yeah, it's Menippean Thunder or something?
Yeah, Menippean Thunder at Finnegan's Wake.
Yeah, and they said that you can only get that by having written permission from the author.
Yeah, you can do that. Then I put a note in there that you should write to or call up Time Again, and they'll give you Eric's number. Eric will give you permission, no problem.
Oh, that's McLuhan's son, right?
That's McLuhan's son. But if you call Time Again and ask Nelson, say, Nelson, I need Eric McLuhan's permission to buy his dissertation. Can you give me a contact number? He'll let you know.
Have you seen it?
Oh, I bought it, yeah.
Is it good?
It's a must. Yeah, it's great.
How much is it?
Oh, I think it's around 30 or something. I forgot, maybe 20 or 30.
Okay.
But it's worth it. If you're seriously wanting to study this stuff, get that. Roland McHugh's Annotations to Finnegan's Wake.
I just got that one recently.
Where'd you get it at?
I told my sister I wanted it for Christmas, and so she got it for me. But I think she probably got it at Dutton's
on San Vicente. Great. Well, that's a great Christmas gift.
Yeah.
And so have you been exploring Finnegan's Wake a little?
Well, you know, I've Robert Anton Wilson, right?
Yeah.
I've been reading him for a long time.
Oh, he makes a lot of references.
And Ulysses. So I've been interested in Joyce for a number of years.
Well, what'd you think of that call from Robert Anton Wilson?
That was pretty good.
You think it was him?
I think so.
No, that was the fake one.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's what we've concluded. I think Bob played along, and then, I mean, I have a friend who's met Robert Anton Wilson and insists that was him, but I if you listen to the fake one from a couple shows ago and then the real one, you can tell that was a fake one, especially because I don't think Robert Anton Wilson would use that kind of language.
Yeah, that did sound a little bit strange to me.
Yeah.
Now that you mention it. And another thing,
and make such a stupid point.
Right. Seems to me that he would have his own ideas about that question anyway.
Exactly.
He knows a lot about Crowley.
Exactly.
You're right. It must have been but the voice sounded really close.
The voice sounds close, but the content seemed.
Yeah. One thing that Bob said that kind of got my interest up was, supposedly he's 71, right?
Yeah.
And he mentioned something about, he said he looks like he's in his 30s because of some, like, Joe Blow's, you know.
No, Joe Dunn Sloan was the third passer on of a water purifying rock, an energizer called the D-Cell, D and then C-E-L-L.
Oh.
And they're harder to get now, but it's like a little stone you put in your water, and it purifies it and energizes it. And then you take it out every couple months and have the sun re-energize it.
Have you seen those?
Oh, yeah. I've used it since 88.
And what does it do for you?
Well, I think it energizes me. I think it keeps me healthy, and it purifies the water. University of Quebec did a study on it and proved it was 90% effective in purifying water.
So where do you get those?
I don't know, man. It's hard to get them. If you know, that's a good question. You know, those sort of questions are really the ones where you should call Bob and ask him. That's the opportunity you can't ignore, that you have an hour and a half to be able to call up this guy and just talk directly with him.
Yeah.
So anything you have, I mean, I'm more than welcome to entertain the questions and talk to you about them. But it's really a unique experience, and I mean, it's not that hard to get through.
Yeah.
You know, especially I recommend getting through right away at the beginning. Because, you know, the phones were just funny because of the earthquake, but he'll spend 10 or 15 minutes with you.
Yeah.
You know, they're not rushed, and then David starts moving the calls faster towards the end of the show.
That one guy came in twice also.
Well, yeah, but you can't blame Mark on that. It was David was hitting the buttons at random.
Yeah, I'm only saying that, you know, it seems like it's not that hard to get in. Like,
oh, it's not that hard to get in, no.
But you know him, right, Bob Dodd?
Yeah.
What, does he actually look that young? I mean, it's hard to believe that a guy 71 would...
He looks like he's 40-ish.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. He's real healthy. I mean, we played ping pong together and swam in the ocean together.
What is his, does he have a lot of academic, formal academic training? Or?
Not so much formal, but informal, like hanging out at universities and studying.
And what does he do? I mean, how he seems to travel around the world a lot.
He doesn't really... what he does is what you hear him do. That's his.
Or he just gets on the radio and stuff and talks.
Yeah, but he doesn't get paid for that.
But he said he was wealthy anyway from
Yeah. Well, he's just like a... It's hard to explain. You know, that's another thing. You got to ask him that. You know, what do you do? I mean... You know, you could ask him, I mean, that would be a good question. What do you do to pay for your rent? What do you do to pay for your bills? That's a legitimate question.
But I think the previous show, he said he inherited a lot of money.
Right.
That's what, anyway.
Yeah.
But he doesn't, do you know of any kind of, a lot of times he throws in a reference to some author or some book or something. But do you know if he has like a book list, a reading list?
Well, didn't you get the four pages?
Yeah, I got that. There's some things mentioned
on the Joyce and McLuhan page.
Yeah.
There's a little blurb about Joyce, and then it lists all McLuhan's. And then after McLuhan's books, I've listed some other ones. I mean, other than that, I'd say read Christian Murty, Alan Watts, Bucky Fuller, all the people McLuhan refers to, which goes back to Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
I'd read Hugh Kenner, The Pound Era. That's a book about Ezra Pound by Hugh Kenner. I'd read all Hugh Kenner books on Joyce. He's a lit criticism guy. I'd read all the obituaries in every newspaper and magazine you can.
And why do you say that?
Because that's something you learn from Mae Brussel. Have you ever heard of her?
Only this, no, not before.
She's a woman who was a political researcher. Go to a bookstore and get Paul Krasner's new book. You know that? You know who he is?
Sessions of...
Yeah, yeah. Just
I read it.
You read the whole thing?
Oh, yeah. Was she mentioned in there?
Yeah, she's mentioned... there's a picture of her.
Oh, yeah, she... That's right.
Right, right. So that's who Mae is. Now, Mae studied obituaries because when someone dies, they connect that person to a lot of other people. But say they're writing an article about that person and he's not dead yet. Well, they don't connect him with everybody, so there's less logistical conclusions you can make from his associations when you're just reading general articles. So by reading obituaries, you can acquire pattern recognition, which is basically comprehensive awareness.
Yeah.
Comprehensive awareness is really what you're striving for, because you're going for the big picture instead of specializing in just reading Finnegan's Wake or just reading McLuhan.
Yeah.
That's not the way.
Yeah.
You know, it's much broader. And, you know, I mean, it's just, if you got the liner notes from that I sent you, or you got the first CD, it lists the 10 holy offices, which Bob, you know, LaRouche, Zappa, McLuhan, Finnegan's Wake, Herbert W. Armstrong, And you just study each one of those.
You're talking about the media ecology?
Bob's media ecology, the first side of the liner notes, about midway down on the first column, there's a list of 10 people.
Yeah. Yeah, I went over to Tower Records a long time ago and just asked them about that one, and they said they didn't have it.
Did you say producers for Bob as the artist?
Well, they found it on their computers.
Oh, they found it, but they didn't have it in.
No.
Yeah. Well, call time again in Toronto, and you could order both CDs and Bob's book. That's the best way.
Okay. All right.
Because they're I think they're 15 each, and then 15 for the book, so it'd be $45.
Does that CD have? Does he have like a sort of different recordings and so forth thrown?
The first CD has different music, sort of rap oriented, and then the second CD has various artists taking tracks from the first CD and remixing them. The outstanding one being Negative Land. But there's excerpts from his radio show on both of them. The second one's better for the excerpts, because when you hear the excerpts, there's no music mixed in.
Yeah.
But I'd come to Vidiot's and even bring a tape recorder and just tape it, you know, get the sound.
Okay.
Because it's pretty interesting.
Do you see him, Bob?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, it's a pretty unique opportunity, too.
Yeah.
Because he doesn't like to go, you know, be seen. I mean, he's much better on the radio, you know. That's the way he likes to do it. And introduce yourself to me, too.
I know you? Oh, you'll just be one of the guys running the...
Yeah, I make the opening announcement.
Oh, okay. And what exactly is a Tetrad manager?
Tetrad is a four-step process. Didn't you get a page?
Seems like I remember it, but I didn't.
Yeah, you might dig that page out. It's a four-step process of analyzing phenomena, any man-made phenomenon.
Oh.
So a Tetrad manager is anyone who's utilizing this. If you study the four steps, you do it all the time. You're just not aware of it.
Uh-huh.
But a good exercise is like do three or four Tetrads. Just write them down and sort of brainstorm. And then get, there's two good McLuhan books that are in print that you should get, Global Village and Laws of Media. And they both have a lot of Tetrad stuff in them.
Okay.
I mean, that to answer your question, what to start reading, there's your best jumping off point right there, those two books. You could study those for the rest of your life. Still not understand them, but it's still going to be a catalyst for learning for you.
Yeah, but Bob, he doesn't fully go along with everything McLuhan said, does he?
No, he doesn't fully go along with anything.
Well, I mean, okay, I don't mean fully, but...
Right. He will hoik up and tear down all the 10 holy offices. Just because he calls them holy offices, he doesn't treat them like it's a religion or something. He's constantly, not tearing them down isn't the right word, but, you know, questioning them and not, you know, not saying everything they say is the, you know. There's so many extensions, too, to the 10 holy offices. Another guy you might check out his books is William Irwin Thompson. You ever see any of his books?
Yeah. Well, he mentioned it before. He wrote a book called Time Falling Bodies Take Delight or something.
Exactly. Have you seen that?
Well, actually, I bought it used.
Good.
It's usually I go to the library first, and then but I couldn't find it anywhere.
What part of town are you in?
I'm in Gardena right now.
Great. And your name's Alan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, the thing is, the reason I'm interested in Bob is because I'm just interested in all kinds of strange things, weird things, like, you know, like I said, Robert Anton Wilson and things like that.
So, yeah.
I mean, this guy...
Wait, what year were you born?
52.
Yeah, so you're the same age as me.
What do you do? I mean, what you...
What do I do?
What's your interest in this area?
What's my interest in Bob?
Yeah, I mean, It's just like me, I guess. You just sort of...
Exactly, and I sort of met him through the Zappa connection. We were both interested in Zappa. And then, since then, he's really affected my life and opening me up to a lot of exploring new literature. And it's pretty much exploring everybody who ends up on Roy of Hollywood shows.
Oh.
You know? You ever listen to Roy?
Oh, yeah, all the time.
Yeah.
I tape it, usually, and listen to it during the day.
Yeah. So,
somebody said something about why doesn't Roy put Bob on...
Oh, I know it. It's well, we got Roy has right now has a 100-minute dialogue between Bob and Jeffrey Hill, who's wrote a book called Illuminating Shadows: The Mythic Power of Film. And he says he's going to play that. If you ever hear it, call me up, even if it's the middle of the night.
Okay.
Because I'm done.
I heard that guy Jeffrey Hill before.
Yeah.
On his show, and I.
Yeah, well, Jeffrey's very interesting, too.
Yeah. In fact, I got his book.
Yeah, that's a good book. Yeah, so, what's my interest is pretty much the same as yours.
Yeah.
You know, just exploring new things. And I think he's really the most incredible guy who's ever been on KPFK because he merges everybody they have on KPFK. And no one does that. Everyone's specialized.
Right. He seems to have... He knows something about everything, no matter what you mention.
Exactly. He's got comprehensive awareness. And, here's such an ironic thing. He also keeps everything boiling and bubbling up. Because imagine being a normal KPFK listener, and on March 19th, you just tune in, and all of a sudden, you hear Howard Stern interviewing Frank Zappa. I mean, some KPFK listeners are probably going to freak out because the reason they listen to KPFK is never to hear Howard Stern.
Right.
But then again, they're usually a little open-minded, and it will give them that first virgin look at Howard, you know.
That's one thing that kind of came to my mind is that most people, they don't realize it, but they sort of inject their own personal bias to everything so that some sort of emotional kind of feeling comes up when they see something. And so it's like, even though, watching some dumb program or listening to Howard Stern may seem like a big waste of time and he's a jerk, but it's sort of, there's information,
There's always information. It's exactly what McLuhan said. There's no such thing as a good or a bad movie.
Right.
It's a good or a bad experience.
So you just have to step further back and see what the whole...
the experience is and learn from it.
Right.
Exactly. That's what Bob is so good at.
And you
can be selective, just like LaRouche was saying when he was talking about TV as being selective, and then David reiterated it. You can be selective. I mean, Bob used to sit and listen to Howard Stern and Rush Limbaugh at the same time and just flip back and forth.
Yeah.
You know? So it's just monitoring the stuff and getting what you can out of each one.
I think one of the danger signals is when you feel angry or bored or something about while you're listening to a program.
Well, that's human emotion. I think you got to be honest with your emotion. It's that you let that become so dominant that avoid learning experience.
Yeah.
But I think you still got to be honest to your feelings.
You're learning something about yourself if, certain emotions or feelings come up.
Good observation. That's good observation.
Okay, anyway, yeah, I guess I'll probably show up there next
time. Give me a hint of what you look like because I'll look for you. You have glasses or facial hair? Or?
No, I'm clean shaven. I'm, I'm third generation Japanese American.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
That helps. And your name's Alan what?
Kaminishi.
Great. Well, good to hear from you, Alan. I hope you come up and talk. Because, after the Bob video, if you don't want to sit there, just get up and come to the back. I'll be by the door.
Okay.
And just, you'll see me. But I do highly recommend get there at 8:30 so then you get a good seat up front because the sound's going to be shitty. Then after the little music, then after the Bob video, come to the back and we can talk and meet a little.
Okay.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks for calling, Alan.
Okay.
Stay in touch.
Yeah.
Bye. Go ahead, Mark.
Anyhow, picking up the idea of what the person's supposed to do as an agent understanding homeopathic retrievals, part of the joy of the enlightened individual would be to, instead of replacing the tetra manager, to become their own homeopathic pharmacist, realizing what type of retrievals are necessary for their own media ecology and for their own self-unfoldment. And on a completely unrelated note, I've been listening to Larry Coryell, and he sounds a lot like Zappa.
That's good. I like Larry. But where did this pharmacist idea originate from?
Well, other than just the weird flash of moment when I was talking to Jerry and just the concept of being your own media doctor, I saw Bob as the person who is basically in the position as a tetraed manager to be the ultimate media pharmacist in prescribing what types of retrievals are necessary for adjusting the consciousness of the collective preference. Hard to say, other than to say that
you haven't had any obsession with drugs recently, and that's why.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Sure, you know, as related homeopathic to homeopathic, you know, Bob is only the pure and dilute form of the answer.
And what is the answer?
What is the answer? The answer is to form one's own personal media ecology and remove the government-in-place filters and get down to the real message, which is have a good time.
Hey!
I don't know. Something like that. Anyhow,
okay, thanks. Wait, let me turn this off. Okay, bye, Bob.